Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Down in Front. Our movie this week is X2, X-Men United. Pop in your DVD or Blu-ray, press play, press pause with the 20th Century Fox logo beige to black. The first frame you perceive of all black, press pause, and the second I'll say 3, 2, 1, unpause. At which point I'll press play, you'll press play. We'll watch the movie together in perfect sync. It'll be like getting to the commentary, except of course with four friends in your head. Those friends that speak are myself, as always, Steve Christie. My friend Brian William Finnifter.
Greetings.
Michael Dorkman Scott.
Hello.
And Eddie, the Eddie Doty.
Da-na-na.
No, that was perfect. X-Men, the whole franchise isn't something that I care about too much. I didn't really mind them when they happened. I didn't really have opinions. I didn't see Wolverine. You know, I don't care. But then I saw X-Men
Oh, man. See, you got to see 3 and you got to see Wolverine because those are going to be some fun commentaries.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I saw that blurb on the case. Yeah, I didn't mind it that much.
Yeah.
Remains a stalwart. And I saw X, the first class one, just the other day, like a couple weeks ago. And God, I loved that movie. So now I'm interested to see if I care about this more now that a movie has really made me care about the characters in a way that I hadn't prior. But X2 is, I think everyone agrees that X-Men and X2 are both really good. X2 being a little bit better. Isn't that the point? Is that sort of the consensus of the world? I don't follow the X-Men thing.
Yeah, I think that's the general consensus.
Right on. Yes. I remember it being a good movie, but it hasn't been until now that I think I might care about the characters more this time, so I'll have more to say at the end than I do right now. Brian, how are you on X-Men 2?
Well, the X-Men, as much as I am a comic book person, the X-Men are definitely my bag. I grew up on the cartoon as a kid and loved the cartoon, and they were always kind of my main comic book portal to comic books. And then I read the Ultimate X-Men, you know, kind of in college and a little bit later. So when the first X-Men movie came out, I was deeply hooked and anticipatory, and I'm really happy with the first two, and that they kind of lead the charge. And I think they don't get quite as much credit as they should. You know, Batman Begins and the Nolan Batman gets a lot of credit for bringing a new kind of realistic sensibility to the genre. But if you really look at the Bryan Singer X-Men movies, he kind of paves the way for that. So I love both of the Bryan Singer X-Men movies. I actually don't mind the third one as much as other people do, but that's like...
Is that the one with the Golden Gate Bridge?
Yeah, but that's shades of hate compared to, you know...
Right on.
It's splitting hairs of hate.
So between Spider-Man and X-Men on a good day, you're going to watch X-Men?
Oh, much, much, much more. So, yes. Yeah, I mean, I'm heavily invested in the X-Men, and I really enjoy X2.
Cool. Mike, what's your whole X-Men thing?
Excuse me. I wasn't really I like the movies. I'll say that. I don't have much of a background in X-Men or comics, as I've talked about previously. I don't, kind of like you said, it doesn't bother me that such things exist. But I'm not the expert on the panel here, although I've certainly managed to osmose a lot of the mythology.
Osmose a verb?
It is now.
I'm suddenly terribly curious
about all comics. Actually, I could kind of talk at length about comic series I've never even read because I'm just so aware of them.
Because you have to be, because you sit between these two assholes.
So, but I like I am somewhat aware of the X-Men because of the Saturday morning cartoon show.
It is a word.
Hey.
Osmose. To osmose.
Someone diffuse or cause to diffuse by osmosis.
Someone ran it. I said it backwards then because I'm talking about it coming towards me and not diffusing out from me. But anyway.
Ismos. But you can speak X-Men.
At any rate, I can talk X-Men. I'm aware of the fundamental properties of X-Men. And
it's
stuff.
Like someone who can speak Spanish can kind of speak Italian.
Yeah, exactly. And I like the X-Men movies. I think the first two anyway. I agree with the notion that X-Men 1 is a very good X-Men movie, and I agree with you that it doesn't really get the credit it deserves for taking comic books seriously,
yeah,
so to speak. I mean, Nolan stood on the shoulders of this and took it even more seriously,
right.
And
Singer
like
in turn stood on the shoulders of Donner to give everybody proper credit for with Superman,
right.
But just yeah,
and Norrington for Blade, of course,
of course, of course. Uh huh.
But
Goddard.
at any rate, the second one I do think is better. I think Singer kind of got into his groove of doing action and a bigger budget and stuff like that. I think the action in this is much better than it was in the first X-Men movie. Yeah, you can definitely see the direction, obviously, that they were trying to point the trilogy. And then when Brett Ratner came in, he was like, there? And sort of, like, kind of got it, but didn't... He understood the trajectory, but he didn't tell the same story that they were trying to tell. He just kind of told... He's like, obviously, Dark Phoenix, right? So whatever that is, I'll do it. But we'll get to that when we get to that. But... I do think this is a good film, and until First Class, I would have said it was the best of the X-Men movies.
So you would put First Class above this?
I would. I think First Class.
Because I don't have as much of a man love for Matthew Vaughn as other people seem to have.
Hmm.
Like First Class is a perfectly good movie, and it's solid, but... I don't know. It just doesn't push all my buttons the way it seems to.
We'll get to that one, yeah.
Real quick, though. The one thing that did bug me about First Class only kind of bugged me, but it might have really bugged you, which was that there was VTOL on the
SR-71 in the early 60s.
I'm looking at this thing going, no, don't.
Stop it.
No.
when they're floating submarines with their brain, I mean, you'd...
I know.
Second magic being it, whatever.
It's fairly easy to say. So that's the thing that you thought was weird in that movie. Okay,
yeah. Anyway. Yeah, with X-Men gets to get away, and really Marvel in general, but they get to get away with the second magic beam thing because they're like, yeah, just that guy is magic beam number four. Like, there's right. Oh, we need someone who can do that? We just introduced that man.
There may have been a that man. I'm not exactly sure. I have to check my Marvel compendium.
Yeah. What do you need him to do? To pick a lock? Lockman, what are you doing here?
Anyway, Eddie, as our comics historian in good standing on this podcast, what is your thing with X2?
I love First Class a lot, but I would still put X2 just a hair above it.
Really? Why?
Story-wise, I think it's just... It I know Trey always liked to say that you know, becoming is more interesting than being, and by and large, I would say he's true. With that said, I still think that the superhero origin story is not always just the most interesting story to tell with these characters. Once these characters are set in motion, he still made X2 is a good example of characters that are already established, but they're still becoming something. They're still in the process of changing. They're still in the process of growing. I don't think that the origin story is the most becoming part of their sort of life history necessarily that you're going to encounter. Some of them absolutely, some of them not. But I want everybody to just take a second and appreciate this, because you're about to hear a sentence that no one has ever else muttered in life. In fairness to Brett Ratner, Matthew Vaughn was originally supposed to direct X-Men 3.
Yeah.
And he took the reins, and he, for various personal reasons, backed out and left Brett Ratner with literally 6 weeks of prep before he had to start shooting. So
we just made a movie.
With that said, somebody could have landed the ball and scored a touchdown, but Brett Ratner, you know, so like, what are you going to do? But
in fairness, it wasn't the easiest possible thing.
Yeah, I mean, and really, Brett Ratner didn't have a lot of time to assert his will. No, I think everyone should have a tail. Like, he didn't. It's not like he had the ability to do that. With that said,
that was what was missing, really.
Yeah.
With the tail.
With that said, there is a director's responsible for tone, and the tone of 3 is just wildly uneven, as opposed to X-Men 2, the movie we're reviewing today, which is where I think this it really knows who these characters are, it knows what the world is, and we'll get into it, but. What Bryan Singer understood, which a lot of people didn't necessarily understand before him, is that you don't need to follow a specific arc. You can take wildly different story arcs from the compendium and combine them to tell the story you want to do. That's something I think Nolan and David Goyer got really well with Batman. I think this sort of set the template for it, because they take these weird arcs and characters that had nothing to do with each other, and out of it were able to craft a singular narrative that is the movie they wanted to make. So
you mean like mining 40 years of comic
exactly.
book history and distilling the best story elements from 40 years into 2 hours.
And taking two or three different elements and characters, like from the taking a character from God Loves Man Kills, but taking out that religious aspect and then combining it with sort of the hints of the Dark Phoenix, also with a little bit of the Weapon X project from Marvel Comics Presents from 89. Mm-hmm. Like taking like three or four different things that literally never touched each other in the overall X-Men narrative in the comics, and like a blacksmith hammering a sword, and folding the metal upon itself, was able to create something indistinguishably unique. and self-contained and that works on its own merits. And I think that this movie, more than any other comic book movie, really, because you can look at Spider-Man and go, well, okay, it's Green Goblin. You know, it's a Green Goblin, it's origin story in Green Goblin. That makes a lot of sense. You know what I mean? Like, and yeah, they swapped out Mary Jane for Gwen Stacy, but whatever. It's origin story and it's origin story and it's Green Goblin. Cool. Same thing with Blade. They kind of reworked Blade, but basically Blade doesn't really have any arc. He just stabs vampires. Fine. That's totally okay. Superman. Okay. He's discovered and it's the basic story. Yeah. This is where it's like, no, I this is a story I want to tell. I can mine from these elements and tell my story. And it worked.
It's great. Anyway, Eddie's going to have to roll out in about an hour and 15 minutes because he has a baby. Well,
like you do.
He has a toddler, the toddler, Doty. Anyway, yeah. But since we're all here and ready to go, why don't you put your finger on the button? You're at the point where the 20th Century Fox logo has faded to black as we are here. Three,
with,
two.
With the X, just one hair still there, which is a nice touch.
Yeah, it's X because three, two, one, unpause. And we're in.
Marvel
I forgot
logo.
This is a Marvel movie. See, this is what I know about comics.
Yeah.
I forgot that this logo has been around longer than Iron Man.
That's every comic ever. No.
Well, this is pre, Kevin Feige days of...
Is it Feige or Feige?
Feige.
Feige, I think.
Yeah, it rhymes with Teague.
Yeah. If it were Feige, well, I would assume
This is definitely the Avi Arad administration when Avi Arad was mainly in charge of this. But this is before Marvel Studios existed.
Right.
This is just when Marvel Comics were licensed to various production companies, but Marvel Studios as an entity was not a thing.
This is before Marvel said, you know what, screw Fox, screw Sony, screw everybody else. Yeah. We're going to do it ourselves.
Abed?
I just want to point out that little intro monologue is, he says, there's a debate whether humans are the next link in the evolutionary chain or simply a new species of humanity. I'm like, you just said the same thing twice.
Yeah, there's no...
This is alliteration.
I'm watching this and all I'm hearing is...
There's a debate whether this is delicious or scrumptious.
This is totally Fight Club.
It is very similar to Fight Club. It's probably
the same studio, too.
Yeah. But
ooh, but it's pretty.
Well, it's also
same
similar
movie.
To Spider-Man. It's just the kind of titles from that era.
Yeah, let's commit to that. Yeah. Let's take this entire commentary and make sure that we can draw all the allusions to the point where everyone agrees that this is literally just Fight Club. Like,
right.
It's the exact same
thing. It does feel very much... I was thinking that, too, that how it felt very much the same as Spider-Man. Spider-Man titles. I wonder if they were even done by the same person. I should have checked.
Well, this is where...
The same team.
This is where was it Tom Rothman, head of...
Fox
at the time, basically said, oh, okay, you can have some money. Like, you made us a boatload of money with the first movie. We can give you a bit more budget this time around. I don't think you could have done Nightcrawler on, the effects budget you had in the first movie.
Alan Cumming is a badass. That's one thing I do remember about this movie. I love Alan Cumming.
Cummings.
Yeah. And it's brilliant casting,
sequence.
Too. It was not one of those expected castings. Like, everyone has, their sort of nerd fanboy dream castings. But Nightcrawler, there was no fan outcry for somebody to be in blue and a tail. But once they announced Alan Cummings, it's like, oh, yeah, he kind of does look like the guy.
Yeah. You know? Well, the X-Men movies, they're always the one that, as a... Now that the big ones are already established, mm-hmm. Hugh Jackman's going to be Wolverine until he's 60, and then maybe they'll get someone else.
Yeah, exactly.
the main ones are spoken for, so now it's just a matter of people thinking, oh, what's the next mutant going to be? They don't care who plays them.
Right.
They just want to know when those powers are going to appear
I think there's still an element of casting.
Yeah, no, there definitely is. I mean, the thing with Nightcrawler is that, and what Alan Cummings brings to him specifically is there's an element of vulnerability to Nightcrawler, both in the comics and brought up really well here, that I think Alan Cummings is able to sort of translate. With that said, he can still be a complete... badass. Now, there was a popular, almost shareware version for the PC of an X-Men video game in 1988 that I used to play religiously, and you would automatically lose the game or kill your character if you were Nightcrawler and you teleported into a wall, because they always made a big deal in the comics, like, if he teleports in there, he's dead. But, and that's, I think that's kind of like, it matches his character, because there's always that risk. I'm about to teleport, but if I'm off by like a foot, I'm dead.
Yeah, it's just a beautiful effect.
Yeah, and it's and if you know the comic, you know very famously,
Bamf
is the thing, and you always know Bamf and leaves the a scent of what was it, brimstone or lavender? It was like
it's a brimstone kind of an
odor. Like, but at least and that's a cool little thing. Like your power leaves an odor. Like it smells like Nightcrawler's been here.
What's weird is that he doesn't immediately teleport. There's a beat between him disappearing and him arriving.
Yeah, they have to figure out they talked about that. I remember watching the behind the scenes. Worth pointing out, by the way, this movie is 10 years old.
Yeah.
And it holds up really well, actually, on pretty much all that. I mean, I just rewatched it to do this commentary, and these effects and
blended with the practical wire work too.
Yeah, are just really fantastically done, and I mean, we watch it now, and none of this looks hard anymore because we're so used to seeing stuff like this. But like that tail was a huge deal at the time,
and it looks good.
Yeah, the fact that they had to track that in, and all the kind of the Bamf effect, like you say, they had to have these volumetric smoke, and they wanted it to feel kind of oily and stuff like that, and because of the brimstone thing, they wanted you to be able to basically smell it, even though you can't smell it, like just in the way it moves and stuff like that. And now they use that for a similar look for the Death Eaters in Harry Potter and stuff like that.
Right,
so we're used to kind of seeing
where
that.
Where does he go between Bamfs? Does he just like self-annihilate and then recapitulate?
No, they actually, I think at one point they explained in the comics, and I could be wrong on this, but there was like one thing where it's like almost like kind of like a parallel dimension he slides through. And then he just kind of pops out the other
side. That's cool. I was wondering if it was like Wonka Vision, where
there's a few mutants with like sort of trans-dimensional powers, like Magic, who is Colossus's little sister. She can kind of go into like this area called Limbo, and there was I believe Shatterstar, not Shatterstar, but Longshot was another.
To a great extent, this sounds like you're talking about My Little Pony.
I know, right?
Longshot is the probability guy, right?
Probability guy, but he was like banished to like
Longshot is a great name for a character,
and he was a great
character.
That's cool. He's a really cool, and that's the whole thing. He just had really good luck. That was his power. He's really fucking lucky. But he had a probability like altering field around him. Like it's like all things being equal, the most improbable thing he could make equally probable.
Is Taylor Kitsch Longshot by chance?
He's never been in the movies, and nor should he, because that's an
fact. No, what I'm saying is Taylor Kitsch literally?
Oh, really?
I'm gonna point out that you're incorrect. Taylor Kitsch was Gambit, as I recall, wasn't he?
He was Gambit in
X-Men Origins.
Yeah, that's
Awful.
Wait, when did X-Men Origins happen?
X-Men Origins.
2009, I believe.
And they're working on a Magneto Origins. I'm not opposed.
Well, they were working on a Magneto Origins, but that became first class.
Yeah. Thank God, because if there's anybody who can sew all this crap together at this point, which, and again, that's I think we talked about it in the first.
Well, I mean, they've even failed to do that in regards to the movies. And hasn't Matthew Vaughn and or Bryan Singer admitted essentially that at this point? Go, yeah, the continuities are off. Because I mean, between First Class and
well,
X-Men 3.
I think that's why they're doing Days of Future Past, because they're like, it's totally hosed, and we're just gonna make it even more confused
there's time travel.
Days of Future Past is a famous storyline from the comics from 1980. I want to say
Days of Future Past is the most Star Trek sounding name I've ever heard.
And it totally is. It is City on the Edge of Forever in X-Men. And is the idea is
the
that
world
it,
is
there's,
hollow and I've touched this
there's
guy.
It is the beginning point of all diverging timelines in the X-Men continuity, and it is a beloved storyline, but people love the story and they hate what it wrought, because from that you get Cable and you get all these other like sort of divergent, alternate reality characters that exist. But with that said, we're going to get Sentinels, apparently, and that was one thing we never quite got in this movie.
We were supposed to get
Sentinels here at the beginning of this, but they ended up dropping at the last minute in favor of the scene, I believe, because they were originally going to just throw it in there, but they...
I really like there's a very small cut here. Like, right there, it just cuts in, and I assume it was on set. Like, they time it so perfectly that you just cut in and you see the monitors are still fucked up for like for like six frames, and then they fix immediately. And it's just a nice detail and a nice timing in the way that they did that.
So
but not calling attention to itself. They don't have a close up of the monitors, you know,
right.
stabilizing.
It's, it's timing within the shot itself, yeah.
In terms of the crime-fighting teams, Marvel has the Avengers and X-Men, and DC has Justice League and Fantastic Four?
No, Fantastic Four is Marvel.
Also Marvel.
So what's... So, okay.
Justice... Okay, so...
this. By the way, with this scene, I was thinking when I was watching the scene, I'm like, you could basically skip X-Men. You could practically skip the first movie and just start here. And they do a really good job of establishing, you know, without as you knows, like, aside from the way that they're interacting with each other, you know, he puts in a reference to, oh, when you have nightmares, the whole bedroom shakes. And it's like, if I've just walked into this thing, now I know that they're together, you know, without having to make a big thing.
And, ever since Liberty Island, you don't need to know anything since then. You know something bad obviously happened to Liberty Island. Yeah. So it's, you know.
You know what I like about this movie? It looks like a movie.
The first one had, I mean, the budget, you can already tell production value-wise, it's massively different.
I wonder who the DPs were comparatively.
They do feel different, actually. That's the thing. And I don't know if he worked with the same crew or not, but it, I mean, just the world feels bigger already at this point. We've already seen, a couple sort of larger set pieces. We've already gotten our hint. We brushed over it, but we've already gotten Wolverine at Alkali Lake.
Yeah.
And sort of the base that was there. And here
same DP they must DP, have, just have more money.
Yeah, that's money, y'all.
Just had a bigger grip truck.
Yeah, exactly.
Who was the DP?
Newton Thomas Siegel.
Now, wasn't Sean Ashmore supposed to be?
What's his real name?
Wasn't Sean Ashmore supposed to be a thing for a while? Wasn't he supposed to be the guy? And then all of a sudden, after these movies, he was poised to be a guy, and then it just never.
I don't know if I
went.
I don't
anywhere.
Know if I ever remember hearing that. That would have been. I think he's good.
He's totally fine.
He was
but
Jake and Animorphs.
I cannot think of
Iceman.
Any
right?
Other,
we're talking about
Iceman. Yeah. I cannot think of anything else he's been in after these movies.
Yeah, I guess so. I can't think of anything else.
Well, let's take a look. Well, he's also got his
he's got his twin brother,
right?
Yeah.
So you can never be quite sure.
Yeah. Oh, cool. We got one to spare? What can we do with this first one that's kind of risky?
He's going to be in
put
his
him in
future past.
Sean Ashmore?
Sean Ashmore, yeah. It appears that he has become just the, you know, one of the disposable people who gets knifed in those kinds of movies.
Oh, good.
Guys, you know. The hot guy who's dating the hot girl and they both get stabbed while they're having sex or whatever.
Now, I love me some Famke Janssen, and I think her and Cyclops is in this movie due to the casting is a relatively hot May December romance. But I do kind of think if there's one piece of casting that Halle Berry from Storm, obviously. But in terms of
his brother was Jimmy Olsen on Smallville.
There you go. In terms of her, I wish they would have gotten someone just a bit younger because a huge part of Jean Grey's sort of dilemma during this entire time is her youth and her, you know, here it's very obviously she's obviously well into her mid-30s at least. And it's like you would expect by this point she's a doctor. She'd be a little more sure of herself. The whole point of the Phoenix and why it was so, you know, it's because it was taking over essentially this young girl, you know, this girl who was barely in her early 20s to begin with. That's one element where I wish the casting would have been a little more dialed in. But
if I had to say one thing about this movie, it would be about Jean Grey specifically, knowing that the intention was to do the Dark Phoenix in 3, which they hand waved at and sort of had, but you know, not really. I wish they had spent more time developing her in this movie.
Yes.
Because at this point, pretty much the only thing that she does in this movie is talk about how scared of herself she is.
Right.
And there's the moment at the end where she sacrifices herself to save everyone, and both Wolverine and Cyclops just completely break down because they were both in love with her. And they do a great job, the two of them. I believe that they care very deeply about her.
But I
don't know if I've said this before on the show or not, but for me, it's like
he's coming out.
If I'm supposed to believe that the characters are, you know, in love, or that a character is in love with another character, I have to be in love with that other character.
I agree.
And I don't, there's nothing in this movie and nothing in the series, you know, even including the first X-Men, there's nothing that makes me be in love with Jean Grey. I really hardly know her, you know, other than that she is a fairly powerful psychic and everyone's a little bit scared of what she might be able to do. I don't know. She needed, save the cat scene. She needed a scene where I see what they see in her. Other than to be fair, she has that scene where you know, Logan tries to get with her, and she's like, "No, I'm with Scott." And it's okay. That's great because
that's not
saving a cat. Yeah. That's just not touching the cat as you pass.
Yeah, that's just like there's a cat. I'm not going to shoot it.
Yeah,
yeah,
I needed something with her. You know, some kind of kindness that I look at and go, "That's why Wolverine is in love with her."
I have a quick question. This guy over here. The guy who's giving the meeting here is Brian Cox, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, is the internet obsessed with him or the British astrophysicist Brian Cox?
Astrophysicist.
So no one likes this guy at all?
No, I like Brian Cox.
Brian Cox is the guy.
I love Brian Cox, the original Hannibal Lecter. I love Brian Cox because...
I'm just saying,
because
I've seen people talk about how amazing Brian Cox is, and I know that there are two of them. Are they talking about the British astrophysicist?
I think they're talking about this guy. Brian Cox is the one,
he's
if you remember.
Awesome.
A little while ago, there was that YouTube video of the kid learning to be or not to be. And how adorable that was.
Yeah.
That was Brian Cox. That was him, like, teaching the little kid.
Right, right, right.
So he's gone viral, that, and he's been in every other thing. He was just in Coriolanus.
I love how good of an actor he is, and yet Troy, which is, like, it's in many ways a bad movie, but, like, Troy, he is so over-the-top, mustache-twirly bad guy in that movie to the point where it's like, you're fucking kidding me, right? Like, but I love him for that.
So they just have the same, okay. Now, that reminds me of something that Gregory Harbin said once, which is that Bill Nye and Bill Nighy need to get together and sort that shit out.
No, you just need to put
them
in with a knife.
That's how you do it. You put a little more... you put a little English on it.
Hey.
Yeah, but those names are just, you know, homonyms. This is the same name twice.
And just like you said, Mike, like, you don't need to know that that was Mystique. Once you saw her eyes flash, you're like, oh, clearly it's
that's
not
that dude.
Yeah, that's not that dude. Or that dude's an alien, one of the two.
Yeah. One way or another, he's not on the up and up with the conversations being had right here.
And what I love about this relationship so much that they never even really touched on in the comics, it's an inversion of the gender roles.
Uh-huh. You know this makes me happy. The little drawing does make me happy.
It's an inversion of the gender roles because usually it's the man not wanting to hurt the woman, you know what I mean, like when they're approaching sex and puberty. And like with her, she's very much in power and control, and she's the one who has to like – really fight off her own urges as opposed to him. And I love that so much about like that dynamic. It's something they never really got, because again, Rogue in the comics was always casted older. She was introduced well into her 20s.
So. Anna Paquin is pretty in this movie.
Yes, she is. She's also pretty in that thing where she's always naked.
Fly Away Home.
True Blood.
this is a
way bad joke there.
This is more for the audience to get caught up, I think, because I'm pretty sure Wolverine has met Iceman before.
In We've the seen first him. Movie?
Yeah, I don't know if there was a scene where they meet, but it's like Bobby Drake was there, and there was...
He was around,
going.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and the timeline of the movie is this is only a few months after the first one, so it's not like... This scene kind of has
not
a connotation of like, oh, this is a year later, or, you know, 9 months later.
Yeah.
And it really hasn't been that long.
I'm sincerely hoping Days of Future Past we finally get to see street punk mohawked Storm. I want that so bad in my life, but...
I think I could stand to see that too.
Yeah, there was a point there when Storm was like,
I think I might
underground
like
80s punk chick, and she like led the Morlocks, and you know she was a really tough like street.
She was Susie.
She was a street kid by nature. She was like in the slums growing up. Like that was her whole thing.
Or maybe Patti Smith. I don't know. Yeah. So here's the deal. I don't think Famke is a real name. Discuss. I think she just made that shit up wholesale. A cool name, and I'm sure it's a real name. It's just, it's such a, I've never seen that
Famke?
Name anywhere else.
Would you rather she be
Dutch.
Called Onatopp?
Yeah,
no. What is her full name in
Onatopp?
Onatopp.
Onatopp, yeah, was her last name.
Really?
Yeah, and
she's the bad Bond girl in Goldeneye.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, that sounds like a Bond name. Blah, 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 blah. Hugh Jackman is a charismatic bitch. I love that guy.
And like Wolverine, he does not appear to be aging.
And see, what's crazy here is that
Paul? Look at him.
No, if the DP is the same, doesn't this prison cube seem lit entirely different?
Yeah,
completely different from the first film.
Well, everything is much moodier than in the first one.
And Chris Pratt from Parks and Rec, apparently. No, I was kidding.
Which I mean, that seems like a perfectly logical explanation for If we're assuming it's a difference of money, because when you don't have any time or money, you lie flat.
Yeah, you lie flat. You just get it done.
If you got the time,
especially with effects, you lie flat. If you've done money and time, and you're unsure of that. I'm trying to remember.
There also may have been something to do with the the advancement, a surprising amount of advancement went on in the 3 years between the first one and this one in DI, digital intermediate, and color grading.
It does look as if they might have gone a little too far on this one. I can't tell if it's my calibration, but it is. It looks beautiful, but it does look like it's been hit by the levels just a little too hard.
One thing I liked about this storyline is that they crafted specifically for the movie, is that they've introduced sort of a third villain that in many ways justifies Magneto's fear and justifies his sort of hatred of humanity. It's like, yeah, we're kind of shitty here.
This is perfect terrorist making behavior.
Oh, yeah. And that's kind of where we were a little bit when this movie came out. But
yes.
More than that, it's also kind of like, it goes back to why your villains need to have like legitimate motivation and just a slightly skewed perspective on reality, but they need to be motivated by something real and not just, you know, evil for the sake of evil. Even the door looks better. Jesus.
Yeah.
Ooh. That's a cool thing you can do when you're Wolverine. I forgot about that.
Yeah, right?
Because he's like, where am I going to put this goddamn thing? You can tell he looks at the door and goes, maybe I can chuck it. I might not.
But again, if you were only coming in on this movie, you're like, oh, here's a guy who can heal himself really quick.
Yeah. And it's nicely played. It also communicates the fact, as is established in the first movie, that it still hurts.
Yeah.
He heals, but it does hurt. And he plays...
It's just great economy of movement.
He makes that fact clear through just his behavior.
Yeah. I mean, we got... I didn't want to exactly harp on it, but his interaction with Cyclops, there's so much going on in every line. He's like, hey, you're going to welcome me back? By the way, your bike needs gas. It's like, okay. So he took his bike, didn't tell him about it, and he goes, so fill it up. And it's like, okay, they hate each other. It's great. Perfect. Three lines. I know the entire dynamic between these two characters.
Who wrote this one? Was this another one done by...
This is Goyer.
Goyer,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, really?
This one? No. This one's not Goyer.
No?
This one was...
Or Zach Penn, maybe?
I think Zach Penn may have been involved, but I know Michael Dougherty and Hader.
Okay, Hader. That's what I was thinking of.
Hader, I don't even know her.
My favorite interaction in the comics with Wolverine is Wolverine with Punisher, because those two fucking hate each other. And there's one comic arc in Punisher where they're fighting, and basically at point blank range, Punisher fires a shotgun into Wolverine's face, and it takes off all of his skin and tissue over the skull. And Wolverine's like, he's trying to say, you asshole, but his tongue is gone, so it's just, and his lips are gone, so it's just like these sounds, and he's like, it's gonna take a week to grow back. Like, he's so pissed about
it's like that scene in Men in Black with Tony Shalhoub.
Oh yeah.
Is there any, Eddie, this will be a question for you. Is there any definitive way established in the comics to actually kill Wolverine?
They do it a few times. There's a couple alternate timelines where...
Ain't that comic books, isn't it?
Well, no. Like alternate
a few times.
And alternate timelines, like House of M, I think they did it.
But that's with the... taking away all their powers, right?
No, they did a thing where...
Isn't it House of M where they lose their powers?
Yeah, but no, it wasn't House of M. It was something after that. It was in the Ultimate line. It was like Ultimate...
In the chat, Nerdy Gray says cancer.
They did a thing where they were trying to streamline the Ultimate universe, and so they just started killing off characters left and right. And I think with... Oh, what it was somebody controlled Cyclops and basically had Cyclops go essentially full blast sustained on Wolverine until like so much tissue had degenerated there just wasn't enough left to regenerate. But ostensibly, yeah, as long as there's enough of him going, he'll just keep regrowing. And then there's been like, I remember in Ultimate Hulk versus Wolverine, Hulk literally rips Wolverine in half and chucks his legs in one direction and his upper torso in the other. And Damon Lindelof wrote that one, actually.
So was the ending really disappointing?
Yes, actually. only because we had to wait like 3 years. It took him 3 years to finish that comic. Only because of that. Actually, yeah, because they literally worked in the script of Star Trek in that as like a plot device.
What?
Yeah. Or no, it was a like the thing they were after, the MacGuffin, was like a copy of Star Trek.
Does this remind anyone else of Gattaca right here?
Yes. Color palette to the building
and even the guy, the cleaner out front.
That's, exactly.
That's got to be a deliberate reference.
Gattaca, yeah. Which
makes sense because it's about genetics and the evolution of man.
And if a movie is going to pay,
but Wolverine's
got to
like
movie.
Wolverine basically has to claw himself back to his legs, which were he makes it clear they were thrown a mile in the opposite direction to like line up and just sort of like have everything kind of sew together. Yeah.
So there's actually a whole number of really nice little subtle references to the universe around here, and we're coming up on a whole bunch on this computer monitor. You'll see like you'll see like references to this, like we talked about earlier, the Sentinel program, which was going to be in it. In the screen here, like the Sentinel program. What else? Oh yeah, all different characters.
Jamie Maddox, the Multiple Man, he was listed there. You actually meet him in the next one. But yeah, you could pause that screen, and all of them are real names of real like heroes or villains.
With the security, second to last one was Bryan Singer, the little security guard's popping up. So.
And the printing pages dialogue box, funny fact, I got nothing.
She could walk up and just use a printer and have it work. Come on. I've used printers. That's not how it works.
Omega Red right there.
Allow me to play you the song of my people.
One of the folders was titled Omega Red. Omega Red was the Russian answer to the Weapon X program. And Omega Red in particular was a dude who had adamantium tentacles emerge from his wrist, and he could, like, control them in all different directions.
Adamantium tentacles?
Yeah.
I thought it was steel or metal-ish. Hard.
It was metal-ish, but, like, metal-ish coating, like, an actual tissue-ish thing.
I do love that this is a really, like, top-secret, highly classified thing, and they, you know, they paid some guy $15 an hour to animate a whole thing I'm talking about in universe. Someone at this classified place got some graphic design student to be like, "Can you make this for us?" Just so when we're looking at it, just when we're looking at it, we want to be able to know everything about it at a glance.
I'm so sick of Windows 98. Like, what can you do for me? Kelly Hu, she was another one who's supposed to be like a thing. She was in this, and then she was in Scorpion King. And then nothing. Like,
well, I was looking at her credits. She seems more like a voice actress now. She's on a bunch of Phineas and Ferb and things.
That's a really weird frame, like the low frame on her. Maybe it's deliberate, but I'm like, I keep expecting Mystique to be like crawling on the ceiling, and that's not her power. What is there's so much of the ceiling frame.
Well, clearly you're not a genuine fan then, Michael.
Because if you were, you'd be now, man.
First. I really hope you lost your job over that one.
I like how we're total nerds that make fun of total nerds.
Yeah, that's a fun bit, just to be clear. No, that was Mystique. The Mexican guy that was Mystique, and not just actually the Mexican guy.
I love how Boston looks like Victor Von Doom's castle. Like, fucking Jesus.
It's like Doom for you.
People. Yeah,
I was going to say the bad 1985 from Back to the Future, but yeah, that works too.
I actually forgot that this was Boston, even though they say it a couple of times. I totally thought this was in the Ukraine somewhere.
Right. I thought, like, I always just assumed it was Germany because Nightcrawler is German.
Because he's German, and look at it.
On a similar note, that's totally
unrelated. Speaking of how much money they had on their grip truck, my God.
Yeah,
look
that's
at
beautiful.
That.
And also, what I liked what they did in First Class was they seemed to thread the needle of the fact that they're very much hinting at the idea that Mystique is Nightcrawler's mother.
Yeah.
Huh.
Because if you look at her, and then you look at what they call Mephistopheles, and the Mephistopheles character in First Class, the guy who could teleport, he's just a red version of Nightcrawler. And in the comics, they actually have verified that fact that she is his mother, and, you know. But she's ageless. She's been around forever, you know.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, because that's another case where the ages of the casting doesn't quite work out.
Well, that's why you get a giant reset button with time-space continuum.
Yeah.
Right. What we're going to get, which I honestly...
I like that idea. They're like, all right, let's break it all the way. And then
it's already broken.
And then we can just stop worrying about it.
Which, if you follow comics, like, that happens in Marvel and DC about every 10 years. Like, that, they just get the Crisis on Infinite Earths or Zero Hour or Identity Crisis or, you know, or Infinite Crisis, rather, they just did. Marvel's had their fair share of resets. I mean, Age of Heroes was the most recent one.
Well, yeah, that's the thing about comics that actually makes them, kind of suits them to movies. People talk about, they're rebooting this, that, and the other. It's like, well, they do that all the time in comics.
I
mean, I know you could line up 5 or 6 different people, ask them the Joker's origin story. They would all give you different answers, and all of them would be correct.
Yeah, one of them was
just like in The Dark Knight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I love so much about that. And this whole thing about the scars and the tattoos that he gave to himself, that existed nowhere else except for this movie.
Oh, really?
It's a total invention. It was never... Because this character doesn't have that in the comics. Like, this is something they just created for this. But yet, it still feels very true to the character overall, and it totally makes sense, like, into his world. You can tell it was just something that somebody not on a script level but a production designer level added, and Bryan Singer was probably like, yeah, let's do that, and work their way backwards into a reasoning for it.
Yeah, because it does look like the kind of thing that, you know, you're designing a character and you go, well, if it's just blue, that's not very interesting to look
Fuck
at.
Fuck him. Yeah.
Let's do like a thing. Let's add some designs and stuff. And they probably just thought, you know, that's just the way he's going to look. And then Singer looked at it and go, well, I feel like we have to justify that.
Right.
I wouldn't have known the difference.
Yeah. I didn't know that was originating with this movie. I thought that was never in a comic somewhere.
I had never seen it in a comic before this.
Another thing along those lines.
Oh, yeah. Like, you've read every comic.
Oh yeah,
yeah. All right.
Okay. It would have been a pain in the ass to draw in the comics. That's probably
the pattern on Darth Maul's face is a tattoo. Is that yeah, like that. The people there don't know. I mean, it's the character Darth Maul tattooed himself
in universe. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
I do like how they did all this Weapon X flashback stuff. If you look at the Marvel Comics Presents story arc where the idea of Weapon X was introduced in like 89, 88. The color it was intentionally dark for a reason, and the art style was very muted, and it was very kind of very chunky color and not very clean lines like you would see in certainly most other X-Men comics. And I like visually he did something to sort of create the same tone. One of my favorite X-Men comic moments of all time was, I think I mentioned this before, was when Joss Whedon wrote it, and it actually starts off with someone looking very similar to this kid in the living room just watching TV late at night, and it's just three panels, and you see one panel he's watching TV, the other panel Kitty Pryde is falling from the ceiling, and then the third panel she stands back up and runs back up to the bedroom, and Colossus is in there naked, and he's like, what happened? She's like, I don't know, that's never happened before.
That's great. Point your microphone at your face, Eddie.
Oh, sorry about that. Hey.
Do it. I've been like turning you up, but then I was like, oh shit, at some point he's going to lean
into the
mic.
Fuck him, he's got to do it right.
And then it's going to get really loud. Look at his hair. So much gel. 2002 was fun, guys.
At 2 in the morning, it's like, oh, I can't sleep. Going to go down and make a snack.
Yeah.
No, he just wants people to really believe him that that's his messed up rolled out of bed hair.
I'm not going to put on pants, but I'm going to put on product.
Well, you never know what you're going to be doing.
That's
true. Don't need pants for everything.
And that is very much a Wolverine. That is very much a Wolverine character thing. It's like, hey, kid, make this cold.
Yeah.
I love Wolverine.
I'm going to use myself as an ashtray. You can make this cold.
Like that. That alone. Like now, I feel like he has more of a relationship with Iceman than he does with
Jean Grey. Absolutely, absolutely.
Just from that one little scene.
And you've just inspired a whole slate of slash fic.
Send me the links.
You don't see massively blue suits that often, or at least not in the last 30 years. I kind of miss them. Pink, orange colors. I love them.
I love how he has a special, I'm going to visit my buddy wheelchair.
Yeah. A special plastic wheelchair. Although, what's his face? I was thinking Stryker. He went in there. He had glasses. I'm like, that's enough.
Yeah.
If he gets it into his head.
Wait, what? What do you mean?
When he, in an earlier scene, he visited Magneto wearing metal framed glasses.
Or were they metal or were they space plastic?
They might have been space plastic. I actually don't know what mine are.
Would Magneto's powers work on graphite?
Well, they come to work on plastic for reasons at the end of X3, so there's just a little reference of, oh, he can control plastic now.
I've totally forgotten about that now.
Well, it's literally two frames before the cut to credits.
Oh, shit. Sure. There was one point in the comics where it's like he's gotten so powerful now. Because, like, there's a whole point where Magneto became president of Genosha, which is an entirely mutant-populated island. And he, because of the exposure to the South Pole, it had boosted his power so much to where he could control the metalloids in your bloodstream. And
right.
So therefore he could just kill you outright if he wanted to, like at any moment. Like that's how crafty he's been. And then he became a good guy again. And then, you know, so.
Would you rather hang out with Iron Man or Wolverine?
Iron Man.
Intellectually, Iron Man. But if I wanted to do like a good pub crawl.
Okay, wait. Do you want to get a beer with Iron Man or Wolverine?
Oh, Wolverine.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I feel like they'd both be fun at the bar.
Oh, certainly. But, you know,
You know what? Wolverine would actually hang out with you, and Iron Man would be playing the room.
That's fair.
That's a good point. Sean Ashmore would just be doing his hair the entire time.
Yeah.
Iceman would just be.
I correct you, sir. Sean Ashmore's hair would be done.
He would never leave the room.
He apparently does not interact with photons until it is.
From what I understand, we're finally getting the standard Wolverine outfit in Wolverine's next movie.
Oh, the yellow one?
Really?
Yeah, like the actual...
No, that's a bummer.
With, well, the, as the wings.
With the wings and everything, yeah.
What?
But oh, and not yellow. I think we're getting the brown. I think we're going to get the brown, which...
No, I like the brown.
Anything but yellow. I mean, I'm, you know, not the comic guy over here, and I'm sure comic fans would be astonished to hear someone say this, but he looks like a fucking douche in the yellow, and he looks cool in the black, so I say keep the
black. Well, I mean, the brown is like, it's the yellow, but just swap the color palette out so it's just brown and black. And I think if with as much time as they're going to be spending in Japan, and they're going to introduce Silver Samurai and all those other guys, I could see a way to introduce that costume as if it's like a ceremonial thing. You know what I mean?
Well,
like,
I know. I just don't want to see him running around in a costume. It looks dumb.
I agree.
You know, we'll see. I'll take credit for it. But, you know, it's going to end up looking like Dick Tracy if they're not careful.
Scenes like this, by the way, are... I'm gonna go ahead and say are a big part of why these movies work. It's because you've got these two amazing actors taking it totally seriously
in a room, just acting the shit out.
In a room, just making, you know, taking it seriously and going for it and totally believing it, and that almost more than anything else really centers the world, and you go, okay. If they're believing in it, I can buy into it too.
When you've got Captain Picard and Gandalf going at it.
And the dude from even the fact that both of them are Shakespearean actors, and you can think of them as Captain Picard and Gandalf, and that instead
still
of bringing,
works.
But in the, you know, I was thinking about that all the way over here, and we've talked about it before with people like Sam Neill and stuff like that. It's like instead of bringing them down, it raises the entire world of sci-fi and fantasy up to have them involved in it. You know.
But we were talking about that was also with Anthony Hopkins at one point. I think we talked about it on Thor, where it's like, I know Anthony Hopkins is a solid, legit actor who sometimes does genre films, but here's the thing. I can't name a single Anthony Hopkins role that isn't a genre film. Like, there's a couple, like, I could name, like, the world's fastest
Howard's
Indian.
End?
I don't know that one. I'm just saying, like, I can only think of ones in which he plays some sort of a genre thing.
You do realize that the weak point in that is probably your knowledge of Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah, that's the weak link there, because he's done a ton of...
But it's true. There are. Yeah. I mean, Ian McKellen is a good example, and so is Patrick Stewart of... They are clearly good actors, and they are classically trained. They're Shakespearean actors, but you try to name a role of theirs, and it's like, nope, fantasy, nope, sci-fi.
Do the same thing with Sam Neill. Try it right now. We'll wait.
This
I
set
can't
piece.
Think of anything but Jurassic Park and fucking Event Horizon and Bicentennial Man.
This is my favorite sequence in the whole movie because it's legitimately disturbing, the idea of like these paramilitary guys coming to like a kid's school.
Yeah,
and
in Red October.
Just the way the action flows.
Red Dawn, you mean?
The way the action flows and the way that all the stakes are sort of elevated, it's got such a great sense to it. And I, like, I remember this was one of the first sequences they screened, I think, at Comic-Con. And this was the thing where it's like, oh shit, we get hints at all of these cool other ancillary characters. This is our first, you know, real glimpse of Kitty Pryde, our first real glimpse at Colossus coming up. But you get, like, all these kids being able to fight back, you know, it just works so well.
Yeah. And it's a fairly long sequence, but it doesn't get dull, because there's always kind of something else. Like, I do kind of wish we saw more of the kids kind of using their abilities a little more.
Oh, what a great oh shit guy.
Yeah.
That guy's
and this was the first one where they really amped up the violence, where you really saw Wolverine just straight up killing dudes.
Yeah. Until I saw Zero Dark Thirty, this is what I thought what it was like in a Bot-a-Bot. I'm pretty sure.
But I love the little subtle...
And by the way, we're 40 minutes in, and I'm pretty sure that's the first time we've seen the claws. They've strung it out like, we know what you want to see. We're going to make you wait.
And it's the money shot.
Yeah.
We're seeing all little nods to his powers, in the sense that... It's brutal here, and completely necessary. There's an aspect of Wolverine's powers called the Berserker Rage, where he just goes completely feral, and this is the first time you really kind of saw that visualized as something, like when it really starts, and there we go.
Oh,
that was the biggest fucking fanboy moment.
Yeah.
And now, it's not the same actor, correct? Like, or
I don't believe it is.
Same actor as what?
In X-3.
No, I think so. I think the same Colossus guy. Yeah.
Well, I like him better in this movie. In this movie, it just works so much better. There's little subtleties and little nods to everybody's power, and, you know, Wolverine first hears them. It's just a close up of his ear as you hear something. So it's like, okay, he can hear things better. And you see the healing factor in the middle of a fight. You know what I mean? Like, just little the ways that Bryan Singer, he just, the same way Harry Potter makes magic a part of the world and just a thing happening around the action, Bryan Singer is able to do here with the powers just happening around everything.
Yes. And I do think they're more they're certainly more front and center. You know, the camera will wait while Wolverine heals and stuff
like that.
But it's not problematic.
It doesn't. Yeah, it's not like so bad to the point where it becomes a distraction.
I saw this at midnight in Westwood, and the guy who played Colossus was there at the screening. I think so was Bryan Singer, but
you're right. He was same guy. Right.
The only time I ever saw someone in a superhero movie at their own screening, and I think I told the story, was in Spider-Man 2, when the chick with the mole in Spider-Man 2 was in the theater, and people were making fun of her on screen, and she had her whole family there, which was sad.
I was at ArcLight for Iron Man when
Iron Man 2, right?
Was it Iron Man or Iron Man 2?
It was Iron Man 2.
Okay.
It was 2. I wasn't in the theater when it happened. I was at the concession stand.
Yeah.
No, that was all before the movie, though. But I was at the concession stand, so I didn't see them do their thingy. They just walked right by me. Oh, there they go. Okay, bye.
I guess they were here.
There was a cool thing. Ryan Johnson pretended to be an ArcLight usher at the beginning of one of the screenings of Looper, or a few of them. At the ArcLight, which is this nice theater in Los Angeles, it's you know, very hard on texting and very comfortable chairs and expensive popcorn and a nice bar. It's just a nice theater. And they had the ushers introduce each movie and say, keep it up to ArcLight's high standards. We'll be standing off to the side here in case there's a problem or anything like that. And if you need anyone, just here. You know, they stand up and do that. And without further ado, here's the movie. And they walk off. And apparently Ryan Johnson put on the shirt and did that a couple of times, and only a few people actually noticed, because we don't know exactly what Ryan Johnson looks like enough yet.
Yeah, I don't know yet.
Hanks did it, he would not get away with it.
Yeah.
But I guess enough people didn't know what Ryan looked like for it to work.
Well, I think if you wigged up Tom Hanks enough and went to, like, you know, Peoria, Illinois or something and did it, you could probably get away with it.
He did a little of the Cloud Atlas treatment on him. He could get away with it.
If you made him look like Halle Berry, it would work.
But then everyone would know it was Halle. You can't do anything with that, Hanks.
Yeah, so Stryker was, again, originally a character introduced in God Loves, Man Kills, which was... It actually had a completely different story. It was about, like, an evangelical preacher who was trying to say that mutants were, like, the spawn of the devil. But basically, there was never really a face to the Weapon X program, so he kind of combined the Weapon X program with his character, William Stryker. And thematically, it just sort of worked. Like, it just sort of, you know, and thematically going back to, you know, making peace with your past in order to move forward, it just worked in this context. And you know, it takes a deep knowledge and reverence without being anchored or weighed down by the material to make something good, I think.
Yeah, you got to find the, like we've talked about before, even with an adaptation, if you're just dealing with one book, you know, if you're dealing with a book, you've still got to find the movie in it.
Right.
And finding the movie in 40 years of material, you have a major opportunity, but also there's the huge danger of getting bogged down, like you said, and locked into it.
Now, oddly,
apparently, this is a real block of ice. Like, they didn't do it with plastic or anything. There's just a 3-ton block of ice in the hallway.
Fucking
there.
Right on.
And God, those must have been the most tense between setups of all time.
Yeah.
Like, okay, we got to go right away.
Yeah.
We're literally losing the ice.
Yeah, they had to keep that play. I think we saw this with David Hayter, remember?
I remember him.
At Zero Friends, yeah.
Wasn't it both? Or I think he talked about this, and he was talking about something like how cold the set had to be kept and stuff something like that.
But. Yeah, yeah. It makes sense. But as someone who – I worked on a ice sculpture show, so I'm 1% more knowledgeable than the fucking layman. Like, I don't know anything about ice sculpture, but I did work on the whole show, so I had to see every episode and write down all the factoids for their little lower third blurbs and stuff once. And apparently, ice sculptures that big don't actually melt particularly quickly. So it wouldn't have been too tense, especially if they were keeping the room kind of cold.
I had an ice luge at my wedding, and that fucking thing stayed up the entire wedding. So
you think that ice luge was a good man? He stayed frozen the whole time.
He's a mensch.
One of the things that the ice sculpture people made was a Han in carbonite, which I thought was cool.
Nice.
For a half second when they hung on that one just
you think it's going to be Mystique or something.
Are you thinking it's going to be a guy or just they? Yeah. No, he's just henchman. Yeah. He's just henchman number four.
Yeah.
But he, but he had great screen presence.
It must have been Bryan Singer's friends. Like, no, don't worry, Jerry. I'll make sure that we hang on you an extra second.
He pledged on the $500 level on the Kickstarter.
Yeah.
These days, that's how that works.
That's a fast camera. and that slowed down. This is the most interesting insight I've ever had. No, I was surprised at how, like, that thing was really moving, and it was surely very heavy, and then it decelerated. It was, you know.
Well, they have these things called dollies now.
I thought you were going to say they have these things called grips.
Yeah, that too.
These big, strong guys who are mad at you.
That's such a random... It's so random that Bryan Singer chose to take a dig at NSYNC right there.
Is that what he did?
He
was ahead of the time, man.
Yeah, I just rewatched it. So, because on the subtitles it just says pop, but
this is 2002,
when they press
right?
play, 2003. It would have shot 2002, so because it came out 2003.
What song is it?
But bye bye bye.
Oh.
But it could have been. It clearly could have been anything. It clearly could have been. You know, they could.
I was just wondering if it was going to be the song called pop. That'd be funny.
It was late 90s. You're right. Because NSYNC was a big thing in the first couple of years I was in high school. So that would have been late 90s. Yeah, exactly.
That was a fun 6 years.
But I think Bye 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 was from one of their later albums. I don't know. I'm no expert.
Did you work on a show about NSYNC?
Eddie, are you the expert 1%. On X-Men and NSYNC?
No, I did. Although my first editorial thing I ever worked on was making the band on ABC, which was about the making of O-Town.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
Right. Yeah.
Were they the ones
I cut bumps and teases for that.
Were they the ones that did that song, Butterfly?
No, they did. No, that... They did Crazy Town.
That was like a
rock band.
There were a lot of towns in the band.
O-Town was Liquid Dreams, and they were never like huge. They were more known for their show than anything else, which I got to cut on. I did cut so much of their choreography that I ended up like instinctively learning the choreography, which Drunken Party Trick is amazing, but. That's my extent of boy band knowledge.
Uh-huh.
A likely story.
Yeah.
Very interesting lighting there, like having him full on silhouette there.
Yeah, but then lighting in the glasses and stuff.
Oh, I think we're about to get our Hank McCoy cameo, right? I think
so, yeah, the senator on there.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, there he is. But
that's Beast.
How do you get from that
to Kelsey Grammer
of
but come
all
on, Kelsey
people.
Grammer is perfect casting for the Beast.
Yes.
For Hank McCoy, absolutely. Yeah. This was, from what I understand, this was just basically Bryan Singer throwing her a bone, just saying, like, you can show up to set and not have to put on 10 hours of makeup one day.
You only have to put on 3 hours of makeup because look at that.
Look at everything.
War paint.
Yeah, right. That war paint. What was it? The makeup shotgun. You know.
She's really bad at this, by the way, this whole roofie thing, because, like, you wait.
It's right there.
You don't give it to her. I'm just saying. Come on, common sense. If you're trying to give someone a drink with pills in it and you don't want them to know there's pills in it, you don't slide it over to them 3 seconds after you put the pills in and it's not even dissolved yet.
And we were wondering if we were going to have a highlight tape this year.
Mike, what else should I do
when
I'm roofing someone?
Yes.
My question is, why did she even feel like she needed the roofie in the first place, given what she looks like, given what he looks like?
Well, because she needed to knock him out so she could stick iron in his butt.
Mike, how do rape?
Yeah.
Well, what is that?
You knock someone out, and then you stick some hard in their butt.
and ask a question. Get an answer. I do like the
nice
Roman
dissolve.
Yeah, I do like the Roman helmet haircut. Wouldn't this just kill somebody?
Yes,
injecting
it would.
All that metal inside, like that would kill somebody, right?
Yes,
it's a good thought, though. Really,
I mean, yeah, it's in the
in
butt,
terms of what they're doing.
Yeah,
in terms of the plan to. I like. I also like. By the way, we completely went past the part where he's in a bar and he's like sad. Like, what's wrong with him? What's his problem?
What's his life? Yeah,
he's got a shitty life and he's ugly.
Yeah,
that's his problem.
And he works a shitty job. We're taking care of one prisoner.
Yeah, although they did go out of their way. They went out of their way to do the Terminator 2 thing, which. I guess you've only seen if you've seen the special edition or the, you know, the director's cut or whatever, the whole thing with the orderlies. Cause like, just like in Terminator 2, Sarah's got to fuck that guy up to get out of there. So you've got to establish that he
is a bad person and deserves it.
Yeah. He has an urgent need to be firmly just macerated at any moment. And they had to do the same thing in this
with
one
this guy.
To establish, okay, Magneto is going to kill the hell out of him really brutally and kind of imaginatively and awfully, and we can't be thinking, oh, that guy's got like a family and stuff, and he's just doing his job and what. No, he's a bad person, and I guess that's the scene in the bar too. He doesn't have a family. Look at him.
He's just a sad, pathetic crap sack man.
No one's gonna miss him.
I kind of have this theory with Bryan Singer that he's got to love something a lot to work on it, but not too much, because he liked X-Men a lot. But he loved Superman.
Yeah.
And I look at Superman, and it's like he fell in love with Superman, but he fetishized certain things about Superman, and that became the movie. Whereas this,
like his panties.
No, like I always said this, the Superman, his Superman movie should not have been called Superman. It should have been called The Adventures of Lois Lane and the Guy Who Lifts Things, because that's all Superman does in that movie is fucking lift things. And that movie is more about Lois Lane and her getting up over the fact that her ex-boyfriend is in from out of town. Like that seems to be what that movie is about. This, he obviously loves these characters, but he's not in love with the characters. Uh-huh. He's not passionately, you know, crazy about these characters.
He has enough objectivity you know, not enough fetishization to do kill your darlings thing that you have to do that we've talked about before.
This is kind
I wonder
of,
where he's at with Jack the Giant Slayer.
Yeah,
I wonder
right?
where, that,
I know, right?
where that came from.
This is a kind of, I mean, this is sort of based around a character in the comics named Proteus, who was, I don't know if he was the son of Moira MacTaggert, but I think she was the son of Moira MacTaggert. But Proteus was basically like an uber mutant who could essentially bend reality.
Yeah.
And the idea being is that he's using this character, which they renamed Jason because obviously they want to keep the idea, the possibility of bringing Proteus in at some point. But this mutant who has very similar powers, and that's where they're getting their serum to control the minds of other, you know, mutants from. And, you know, Bryan Singer, obviously, he's able to draw parallels to something. And this is the scene where essentially Iceman comes out to his family. And,
yeah.
And he's able to get the tone of that just right. He's able to get, like, the
well, because I'm sure
he's probably had that conversation.
Well, not only has he had to have that conversation, but apparently Ian McKellen also advised on that scene no, here's what it's like.
Right, right. And I guess that's what I'm saying. He's got to find, like, If with the X-Men in general, he's able to sort of tap into that. I think with Superman, he tapped in almost too much to, you know, what do you do when your ex comes in from out of town? Like, you haven't seen him for a while. All those strange feelings come back, you know. Because half that movie is just, you know, I feel strange that you're back on planet Earth, Clark. Yeah. And, you know.
Yeah, becomes kind of Stalker Man Returns.
Yeah, Stalker Man Returns. I can lift something. You want to see me lift? I'm lifting a plane.
That's great, Clark. I need more from my life than you lifting things.
I have a son now. Yeah.
I need somebody who can shoot laser beams from their eyes.
Well, I can do that.
I can. Have you ever seen that? We haven't done a Superman movie, so I wouldn't have had an opportunity to bring this up yet. Have you ever seen the website Superman as a Dick?
Yo, superdickery.com.
Superdickery.com.
Superdickery.com is amazing.
So amazing.
My favorite is, he's in space, and Lois Lane is in a full-on spacesuit, because why not, tied to a space capsule, and it's just Superman ripping the tube in two. The air tube, he just rips it in two, like that. And then there's another one where she's walking down the aisle with a giant supervillain with a hood and a T on his chest. And it's like, Superman, no! I'm forced to marry Titan Man! And Superman is literally feet up on the pews going, hey, like, it's
what are
you gonna do? Like, this is what you get.
I also really enjoy a lot of the captions
The captions are good too. There's another one where Jimmy Olsen is like, but Superman, I mean, Dad, I thought you adopted me. And it's Superman literally taking a bathrobe with the Superman insignia, and it's like from a box that says to Dad from Jimmy Olsen. And it's like, this is the worst, and he's burning it with his laser vision.
There was one that actually wasn't about, it wasn't Superman, it was like there was a life-size wooden Superman puppet like strapped to a gurney, and Lois is whipping it with a cat of nine tails, and Superman is chained to the wall in the corner going, no, Lois, stop. And it's like the caption was, I dare you to make less sense.
Seems more like a Wonder Woman thing.
Yeah. But yeah, there was. I also remember one where it was like, there was another one where there are a bunch of them where Lois has these powers and she ends up fighting Superman. And the caption was like, it's like the writer's room had this parrot that just kept, that could only say, Lois gets superpowers. Lois gets superpowers.
Wait a second.
And they just kept listening.
Yeah.
How do you have a metal detector
not pick up all that metal in him?
Well, no. How do you have a metal how do you build a metal detector without including metal in that metal detector? Isn't that a necessary component?
Well, I think there's a certain distance that they consider safe from him.
Such a great shot of him smiling there.
I mean, because they've got computers and stuff, so there's metal, right?
Because science, right?
Yeah. I know these things of computer. Yeah. Here we go.
Nobody this can is, do... I would put it to you like this. Had someone gotten a hold of Ian McKellen just 10 years prior to this, perfect Dracula.
Oh,
perfect Dracula.
Yeah.
Had he done had you gotten him instead of Gary Oldman, I think, and completely changed the script and director and everything else about it. But like, cause fuck that movie. But had you literally said, hey, Ian McKellen, Dracula, and not becoming Dracula, but already Dracula in modern day, there's half your movie right there. I really like the effect on that, how they made like the impurity of the metal, like,
It's pushing. It's pushing the blood back to the surface.
Yeah,
and just condensing
it's really, really subtle work. But man, that's impressive. Man.
You know, now that I think about it, I don't think we've ever seen Ian McKellen and Peter Cushing in the same place at the same time.
What?
Right.
That guy looked like Michael Fassbender. But,
hey, it blew me away to begin with when I found out Grandmaster Pascal was in Star Wars. Like that was a huge day for me.
Yeah.
Like.
I like the no, he wasn't Pascal. They tried to get Roy Dotrice to do Picel, the guy who does the audiobooks, but he wound up being the firemaster.
Yeah.
But
God, he's such a badass. Look at him.
And it's a really interesting thing that X-Men, I think in particular, manages to do in part because it's Ian McKellen and he's awesome, but just in part because of the kind of complex dynamics of the characters and stuff, where you can have that scene where the villain is escaping, and you're totally with him.
And you're like, you go, man.
And you're cheering for it. Fuck him. Like, yes!
It goes back to the very first scene of the first movie and his introduction where, as we've said before, you should craft your villain so he has a point. And
he has pathos, yeah.
Man, does Magneto have a point when you see things from his point of view.
Yeah.
You go, when you introduce your character using the Holocaust, and you go, he thinks humans are fucked up and shouldn't be trusted. Here's why.
Yeah.
And you show Auschwitz, you go... Okay.
Fair enough.
Yeah, you got a point.
And, you know, I liked how they, in First Class, how they were able to sort of mine that material again and add just a whole other layer of hell to it.
Yeah.
That really, I mean, because Auschwitz's bad enough. Hey. Nobody else could hear what Brian was saying, but he said something funny. That looks like a young Nathan Fillion.
It kind of does, yeah.
This is the baby Nathan Fillion. Ronnie, no. And that cat loves tea or coffee.
Apparently. Yeah. I think it's tea. Apparently to get the cat to lick the claws as well with that little gag where Wolverine does it. They put frozen tea on that too. So apparently he just really dug that shit.
Loves frozen tea.
And so they put that on the claws so he would lick
That's
it.
That's awesome. Oh, computer monitors in 2003.
Yeah.
How funny you were.
That's so weird. And
that's
whole CRT
tiny.
Yeah, exactly. It's small, and it's like 4 feet deep. What is that? What's going on?
Meanwhile,
is this some alternate universe?
That's a really pretty internal cockpit setup going on.
Yeah.
Although I have to imagine
everything
that at some point
on.
You would like there to be some sort of a distinction between the colors of all your instruments so you know what you're looking at.
Yeah.
You'd think that.
Okay, we're going to make these buttons that turn the plane into a ball of fire red, just so we can really tell at a distance. So, like, if we're playing catch in the cockpit, we don't accidentally throw it at one of the ones that makes the ball for fire.
This sadly just seems like a scene where they're just like, well, we need Storm to do something. Storm hasn't been around for two-thirds of this movie. We need her doing something.
Yeah.
Aside from butchering dialogue.
Yeah, she doesn't really do much.
She has a point. Like, she has a point when she always says, like, there's just nothing for me to do in those movies.
Yeah.
Apparently, she's going to be in Days of Futures Past, so.
They everyone but him dropped the accent, by the way. Like, any attempt that they were doing an accent, like, Rogue isn't really doing her thing anymore.
Right.
She had kind of a thing. And Storm kind of had an accent in the first one. Now she's just being Halle Berry.
Which is good enough for you.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
It's good enough for everyone, including the Razzies.
Did she win a Razzie for this?
No. For Catwoman. And it will never be forgotten.
Just bad calls all around. I mean, we're never going to do a commentary on Catwoman because who can even sit through that shit?
I actually was just thinking, I'm like, I need to put that on the list. Because that is one of the worst movies ever.
It's astonishingly bad.
Have you guys seen it, Catwoman?
I don't think I still have seen it. No.
It was on an airplane.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. It cuts like every half second. It's so much cutting. Wow. That's the main thing that really bugged me. I'm like, I can't even deal with this, like, let alone how stupid the story is.
Close to comprehensible at all?
No. There's something about like makeup products or something that turns Sharon Stone into fucking Wolverine or something. It's ridiculous.
I wonder if they're going to do a Catwoman spinoff with Anne Hathaway.
Probably not. Well, right now they're talking about the Justice League spinoff, which I don't know. How do you guys feel about that? How do you feel about a Justice League movie?
I mean,
fine.
Fine. I just don't see the point at this. You'd have to do something completely different. The problem is that 2/3 of those characters have not been properly introduced on film.
Right.
Like Green Lantern, they completely botched in every conceivable way. You'd have to introduce like a new Green Lantern. You'd have to get Wonder Woman right. Wonder Woman right, I'd be happy. Like
what they ought to be doing is putting Joss Whedon's Wonder Woman script into production.
Did you ever read it?
I haven't read it, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
If you had the guy who just made Disney $1 billion wrote you a Wonder Woman script like 8 years ago.
Sitting on the shelf.
It's sitting on the shelf. Get a monkey. Literally put a monkey in the director's chair. Just literally.
Yeah.
Get one from the zoo, put a baseball cap on it, and put him in the director's chair, and just make that movie, and you will make a ton of money because you can ride Joss Whedon's name.
And here's the thing. That whole ordeal really messed Joss up for a minute. Like, I mean, he talked about it publicly. Like, I mean, I remember seeing him at Comic-Con 1 year. He wasn't doing anything specific, but I think I mentioned this on another Down Front. But
yeah, I think he should tell it.
But I mean, he basically just said, like, it meant a lot for him to people still be into his stuff after the whole Wonder Woman thing. Like, he was really shaken.
Because he had pretty negative feedback, pretty negative public reaction to it.
They gave him, like, Ron Silver, I think, was in charge. And and they gave him, like, really hardcore notes. And then he made his case. And
Silver? He's an actor. Joel Silver.
Joel Silver was giving some pretty hardcore notes. And then he made his case for it. And then they just fired him. They just unceremoniously just dumped him from the whole thing.
Has there ever been a leak? Like, can we find the script somewhere?
It's not like Kevin Smith's Superman Lives script, which you can find if you walk 10 paces in any direction. Mm-hmm. Like, it's
actually, someone just put out a... I saw that there was like a collection of like basically every Superman script from in that period between the final Superman Superman Quest for Peace and Superman Returns, all those versions have actually been released, so you can read all of them.
Yeah, and the Kevin Smith draft has famously been around, and it's fine. It's not the worst. I mean, honestly, it's one of the better scripts he's ever written. Your miles may vary on what that means, but it's like it.
Well, now it's Clerks 3, apparently.
No kidding. But, I mean, there was at least like a vision for that movie, and Wonder Woman is like, it's such a hard character to screw up. Like, she's so single-mindedly defined, and like every time they try to like translate her to screen or film, they feel the need to just fundamentally change her to be something else. The David E. Kelly pilot, that thing was awful.
I never saw it.
It was online briefly. It was awful. Like, it was just like you don't end your Wonder Woman pilot with a shot of Wonder Woman crying in her bed alone over a man.
Oh
dear!
You know what I mean? Like, it's just it's such.
Well, what was the exact nature of the Joss Whedon backlash? Was it just the fact that is it essentially a different version of the Avengers Black Widow kind of thing? Like, everybody gives him such praise for being writing strong women characters.
I don't think there was a backlash. I think it was just a big deal that he got just dumped.
Yeah,
just at the drop of a hat.
But I mean, it's like, I mean, it's
got I thought there was a public. Public feedback nature to it.
I don't know that enough people read it.
It wasn't aware of the public.
Well, when is never actually having read the source material ever stopped the internet?
True.
Well, no, it never. I mean, it happened. Like, it's, oh, he's hired Renee, great, and now he's just fired. He's just off of it.
But I mean, to be fair, and I'm not trying to bash Josh, obviously. But to be fair, that sort of thing happens in Hollywood all the time.
Of course. Usually you get like opportunities to do rewrites, and usually with someone of his caliber, you get opportunities to rewrite second passes, things like that, and it just.
I guess it just surprised me because that's such a common occurrence, even for established writers. Certainly more common for unestablished, but it still happens to established writers all the time.
It may have been just the incredibly short turnaround time that with which it happened, like almost like Sam Raimi on the World of Warcraft movie. He basically got dumped off that movie by Blizzard, but that was like an 18-month, almost 2-year process. The Wonder Woman thing was relatively short. Mm. Like, he turned in his draft, they gave a couple notes, and before he really had a chance to address them, he was just off of it.
Yeah, that's so awful.
Yeah. And for a kid selling a spec, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But when you contract a big name dude who had a relationship with Warner Brothers to begin with, several years, you know, there's something to be said.
This is I wonder if there was a deliberate aspect of foreshadowing or anything in the small joke he told earlier of to Wolverine, if you keep smoking in here, you spend the rest of your life thinking you're a 6-year-old girl, and then the villain at the end appears to him as a delusion of a 6-year-old girl. Oh,
Eddie's leaving. Eddie's
That's
leaving.
A wrap
I'm
on Eddie.
Saying goodbye.
Bye, Eddie. Mm-hmm. I have two mics. I'll have to swing back and forth just so this one doesn't get lonely. I'm not.
You actually did that for a second.
I did.
Though.
I did do it.
You did it for the joke, and that's what counts.
You're doing a scene with two actors.
Oh, sounds like someone's here. Maybe someone else can jump on. Anyway,
I was texting various people to see if anyone can swing by. I asked Julian and Chad and Ryan. All of them are like, can't.
It's Saturday, dude. We're doing things.
I know. Although Julian feels strongly that we need to get back on the bridge of the Artemis as soon as possible.
I wholeheartedly concur.
Yeah.
I will say, as much as I have never had a thing for Storm as a character and don't like Halle Berry in the role and all of that.
Goddamn.
This is a great sequence coming up. And a great display, like a great cinematic use of her powers. Her making the tornado and everything here.
There is an interesting kind of aspect to... I think in this movie, because they had more money, so they're able to kind of demonstrate their powers more significantly. Every time, so basically everyone gets a big sequence, and just about every time I would watch the big sequence and go, well, they're just the most powerful person in the world. Like, every single one of them.
Yeah.
No wonder the humans are so frightened.
Well, that's what I always liked about the X-Men. I think that's one of the big reasons that I was always drawn to them, is that there's such a diversity in terms of abilities or powers or set pieces, I guess, for lack of a better term, in just like, oh, she can do whatever she wants with the weather. That seems like a big deal.
Yeah.
Or he can do whatever he wants with metal. That also seems like a really big deal. But always in completely different domains of experience, of real life.
Okay, Jagram, you're the fourth panelist, so start talking more and I'll start reading more.
Got to give some respect to these pilots, though. I got to say, they're really
and a nice little touch that one of them is a woman. Which was the case back then and prior to 2003 as well, I'm sure, but probably not as common. But it's nice little touches like that with directors like Singer and others that color kind of the stereotype. Fill in details of the stereotype and go, oh yeah, women pilots, makes total sense.
We're not going to make a thing of it. It's just
the way it is.
And now Halle Berry has been reduced to the Sigourney Weaver role
again,
where she's like, oh my God, there's two of them. We know that Halle Berry. Everyone can see what's going on. And I love Wolverine right here, or no, her. her still. She's like, okay, you just did a thing that I've never seen you do before, and that was kind of pretty scary, but there is still another one. So could you please do that again?
So I scared, impressed, really proud, very proud, going to emphasize the proud, but still need a little bit more.
Yeah.
There's a lot of
Nightcrawler. By the way, Nightcrawler is a bullshitter because right there he totally couldn't see inside the plane and was totally fine with teleporting in and out of it.
My understanding is that it's not that he has to be able to see it, like have a direct.
He just has to have an awareness of.
He has to be able to visualize.
Okay,
it.
Fair enough.
So he has to have been there before,
okay.
I think is the idea.
Sure,
or
that makes
some
sense.
Some other way have a visual.
Well, just so he knows he's not teleporting into a wall or something. Yeah.
But it's still, it's kind of an open question as to how, like, however you calculate that, however the hell he calculates it. Go, okay, so 10,720.2 meters that way, 2 meters that way.
Yeah. If I could pick a power, it would be teleportation, though. I think I've said that before.
Mind control. I'm sorry, but mind control is the most useful power of all time. Telekinesis.
Just tell everybody that you're a teleporter and they'll believe you.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell them that I wasn't there.
Yeah.
I guess flight.
Flight, I agree, is the most fun.
But the problem with flight
is mind control is the most useful.
You could fly fast enough for it to be useful for anything other than having a good time, you'd burn your face off.
Well, you could still wear like a flight suit or something.
Oh, damn. I don't want to. Can my flight suit be like a hazmat suit?
You could wear one of those squirrel suits and then like...
And then just not use it.
Exactly. And like really freak people out that way. Like, yeah, I'm going to do this squirrel suit thing and like
and
do it.
Jump off the cliff and go up.
Yeah. And like do it according to the laws of physics for like the first 30 seconds and then just fuck with people's minds.
Yeah. Flight would be mine. Flight's fun. Plus flight is the only one that isn't on the face of it something that you're planning on using to manipulate people.
It is true. I've thought about the teleportation thing and been like...
I would do so much fucked up shit.
Yeah, I'm like, you really...
Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
You really can't go more than a couple weeks before.
Why are you guys letting that limit you? Yeah, of course I'm going to use mind control to manipulate people. That's why I picked it.
It's true.
I'm just saying that I think...
It's hard to understand.
But you can mind control everybody in the world to think that it's also ethical, so you're fine.
Oh, interesting. Now we can get into philosophy. Like, if you can convince everybody of a wrong philosophy, is that you can change ethics. My God.
Yeah?
I was going to say, if you're running for office at some point, the time code for this file you're going to play on CNN is 1:21:29.
Please, I think I've said enough things on this to torpedo any chance of holding public office outside of Berkeley at this point.
I was going to say something mean about the president in this film, too.
I was going to say if I could be any mutant, I'd be a Nightcrawler, but is that admitting I want to kill the president?
No, because Stryker is the one who did that. He was using mind control.
So what you're saying is it's the military-industrial complex that's at fault.
Yes.
Proletariat.
You know who else said that? Washington. I was going to say Hitler, but that wouldn't have been entirely wrong.
You do mean Eisenhower, though, right?
Isn't Washington the one who was like, "Don't let that happen," or was it?
No, Washington was Washington warned against political parties. Eisenhower warned against the military.
Okay. Yeah, I was confusing it with Eisenhower.
Yeah, I get Eisenhower and Washington confused all the time.
I accidentally killed George Washington the other day. In Assassin's Creed 3.
Dude, are you just like now deliberately trying to tank your opportunity? I killed George Washington in a video game.
Well,
and I liked it.
I didn't know it was him. I just assassinated him from behind, and then the game was like, you killed George Washington, you fail. Oh, fuck.
So you just randomly killed someone from behind.
He was in my way.
Until you found out that it was George Washington.
Well, that's kind of what you do in that game.
Fair enough.
you just killed George Washington. Oh, sorry. Well, they also have a DLC.
You're like Control Z.
They have DLC for where Washington didn't, like, you know, in real history, they were like, so you're going to be our king now, right? He's like, you guys are retarded. Like, what did we just do that whole thing for?
What did we just do?
So we just fought with King George. Let me get this straight. But there's a DLC alternate history where he was like,
bring it on.
What did we do this for if not to make me king? And so he became this insane tyrant, and then you have to assassinate him. That's the goal.
So
Fox News was very upset.
I'm sure they were. I'm sure when they had Thomas Jefferson on the other day, which I just watched this morning. He just had a guy and literally pretended that he was George Washington, or literally pretended he was Thomas Jefferson, and then who proceeded to then talk about how he cut the deficit when he was president and how he believes in small government and yada, 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 yada.
Right.
Yeah.
Man, freaking everyone needs just, I'm just going to put this out there every so often. I'll make this a once a year thing. Everybody read 1984 and really like pay attention. So I'm just going to put that out there.
So I'm gonna put this out there, and I think this will actually torpedo my chances of being King Geek more than what we just talked about.
It's all you have left. Keep it.
But the whole, like, everybody in the world is like, Gene and Wolverine, yeah. Which I think is kind of fucked up. I'm going to say it, because Wolverine is, first of all, he's a homewrecker, right?
Yeah.
He really is just a homewrecker. And if that situation were flipped, if Gene were the guy and Logan and Cyclops were the women. Actually, I don't know where that.
Wait, what's happening?
Was going.
Yeah.
I was doing a gender flip.
You
thing,
were saying that.
But my metaphor broke. Or my.
No, I see what you're saying. So if it were, oh, no. If it were a woman coming in, okay, ruining this,
yes,
relationship, as opposed
and,
to.
And the man, i.e., if Jean Grey were a man in this situation,
yes,
and went with the female Wolverine.
Yeah, the other woman.
The other woman, quote, yeah, unquote. Whoa, people would lose their shit over that. They would burn down cities over that. Like, but the gender roles are flipped. People don't seem to have a problem with it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. I'm not saying. I'm just asking. I'm asking the question. What question am I asking?
I have no idea. So Wolverine is a homewrecker.
But yeah, he's a homewrecker.
Yeah. Well, everyone's like, oh, he's the bad boy and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, absolutely. It's like, but no, it's, why does that give him any sort of right,
yeah,
to jump in and just get what he wants because he wants it? That's not how that works.
You sound jealous.
Isn't this the, yeah, this is Mystique. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought I was remembering this scene right.
Oh, so it's okay if he can sleep with her, because that's not Cyclops' girlfriend?
Well, if you're just doing role play, then sure.
It's a
role play
bit
with a shapeshifter.
Role play is pretty easy when you're dealing with Mystique.
Yeah.
All right, I want it to be me and Hitler. No, me and Mickey Mouse. No, me and half and half.
Half Mickey, half Hitler.
Yeah.
Mickey Hitler, I'm sure that exists.
Walt Disney would have been
Donald,
like,
Hitler exists.
Donald Hitler?
Yeah.
Mickey Hitler must exist. I'm going to look. And again, here goes me ruining chances forever holding public office.
Wow. There were accusations that Walt Disney was an anti-Semite, weren't there?
Yeah.
Yes.
Hmm.
It was a different time. No, but I, you know,
there it is. Mickey Hitler.
Yeah. An actual cartoon, a little animation about Mickey playing Hitler.
Well, there was
not even going to click that.
People talk about the anti-Semitism and stuff like that, but it is worth pointing out that, maybe they got confused. I don't know the actual story, but there is a cartoon, a Disney cartoon about Donald as a Nazi. Donald is a Nazi. He is working for the Nazis.
Yeah, we're just looking at a picture where he's holding Mein Kampf.
He's reading.
Yeah,
yeah, he's reading it,
and he's working for their side, and he's heiling Hitler and all of that. And it turns out to be a nightmare. He wakes up from it at the end, and he's glad to be an American. He's basically, you know, selling war bonds and stuff to be like, yeah, that guy over there, fuck him, right? Like, I'm going to support the American troops. But it may just be that people got caught up with the Donald is a Nazi thing. And misunderstood. But so, I mean, Disney made an anti-Nazi propaganda thing that I think a lot of people are mistaking for Nazi propaganda.
Right. Well,
because they took it away, and all the people see is the context of, of Donald as a Nazi.
Disney, as many places did at the time, made lots of propaganda for World War II. So there's tremendously racist Disney cartoons and other cartoons as well out there of Mickey and Donald and all your other childhood favorites being really racist against Germans and Japanese and
yeah
and whatnot.
Oh my gosh, yeah,
very racist against Japanese. But hey, yeah. We needed it to win the war somehow.
But they haven't done what Warner Brothers has done, which is they put out their cartoons. They put out collections of like Looney Tunes cartoons.
Yeah,
and they've got a card at the beginning that essentially, I'm paraphrasing. They basically say, some of these cartoons are fucking hella racist. And we're not proud of that. We're ashamed of it, in point of fact.
The opinions of the Walt Disney Corporation do not reflect the opinions of the Walt Disney Corporation.
But they make the point that it would be worse to pretend that this never happened.
Yeah.
Because
it's actually surprisingly a responsible thing for a major corporation to do.
It's like, this is what the world was like at that point, so we're putting it here for academic, basically for academic reasons.
For historical posterity, here's what we did, and here's what these were. We're not saying it was cool. We're
not
saying we would make this stuff today. We're certainly not making Donald Duck dreaming he's part of the Taliban cartoons today.
Dude.
Yeah.
I just saw it.
I just saw the poster.
Anyway, X-Men is happening.
X-Men is happening. But we're waiting for we're really waiting for X-Men to happen. They're kind of ramping up to it. We've established all the exposition of we're going into the dam and we're going to do this. I remember
they're doing the Ocean's 11 thing. We're like, okay, here's our big plan laid out. Or as we talked about on Titanic, Trey pointed out on Titanic, we're going to lay out the whole thing. So while it's actually happening, you know what the hell's going on.
Do you remember this, what David Hayter was talking about? Because I remember specifically him saying that this and the third act of X2 unraveled a little bit compared to what was originally planned. And I can't remember why that was.
I don't recall.
But, I do love that guy in the guard room who is like, his response to everything is, I'm going to flood the tunnel. He's like, there's a guy walking down it. I'm going to flood it. It's like, doesn't check who it is. Doesn't wait for anyone else's response.
He's had that job for 9 months, and he's been staring at that flood the tunnel button.
Yeah.
And he is just waiting, man. He is so curious. He wants to know how fast it's going to flood, how long it's going to flood for, what's it going to flood with. He's so psyched. He's running with the imagination.
I think I saw a bug, you guys. I'm going to flood it. I'm going to flood it.
He's begging for permission.
He barely even waited for permission. If Stryker hadn't been right there, he would have.
Stryker had been in the bathroom. We'd have been fucked.
Permission to flood the tunnel. Hello? No. Flooding the tunnel.
Nobody told me no. I didn't. I panicked.
Sorry, guys. I shit my pants.
I do.
Who's
like
the guy behind him? He looks familiar.
Looks like Link.
Over his. Yeah, right there.
Yeah, I don't know. He looks British.
He's a guy, guys. He's a guy.
No.
Ooh.
I do like that moment where things go immediately wrong, where it's like, that ain't Wolverine. You think I don't know? I'm out of here.
That ain't a preacher.
Oh, she gives him the finger as she slides away. Nice. I didn't notice that before.
Flood the tunnel.
Now you get to flood the tunnel.
Yeah, exactly. Now you press the button.
Oh, did he knock out the guy that was going to flood the tunnel?
Yes, he did.
That's not fair.
I love when people are
goddamn tunnel.
I love when people, when Mystique is playing people, so they get to be silly.
Yeah,
for a couple of shots.
I always love those moments whenever they pop up in genre, regardless of the excuse, just like, because it happens in Star Trek all the time,
mm-hmm.
and Doctor Who, I'm sure it happens, and yada yada.
The actor getting to play someone playing them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not so much in Doctor Who, but
that must be really...
Oh, it's an X.
I get it, because it's the Fantastic Four.
Guys, the theme of this movie is X.
X marks the spot.
Yeah. Find X. And did you see there was that image... I think it was an image macro. It was like, dear algebra, stop asking me to find X. She's moved on. She doesn't want to hear from you anymore.
It just occurred to me that in this universe, there should be some sort of a program called Solve for X, which is where they're basically detectives for you.
I'm sure if Eddie were here, he'd be like, oh, yeah, that was a whole run of comics.
There was
a
line in the early 80s that was A, B, and C.
It was in a comic called A Line in the Sand of Day of Life of Time.
A day in the life of the time of war.
In bed.
A day in the time of the life of war in bed. X. Part two. Reckoning.
Society something.
Yeah.
Something something theme.
Depending on the lighting scenario, he is either pale as hell or the tannest person that's ever happened.
Yeah. That little shot, more than anything, that kind of little sweep behind him and reveal, and now we're going back the other way. That more than anything, watching this, I mean, we did a whole episode on the visual effects industry and stuff like that. That more than anything, even from 10 years ago, made me appreciate, like, that's an effect being used to tell the story, to communicate an idea. It's not to right. you know, get that through. And you could have done it with cuts or something like that, you know, 20 years ago or whatever you had to do. But it's so much more effective to be able to do it that way and just to be able to have that tool and to be able to use it.
It's like the tiger. It's the same thing.
Well, yeah.
In Rhythm and Hues.
Well, yes.
In
the
Life of Pi.
The tiger very specifically. But, I mean, the tiger is like actively creating a character. I'm just talking about the way you juxtapose and the way it helps you tell a story. No, even
I got gotcha. You. It just occurred to me that the guy who played Pi was Calvin. And he was imagining a real tiger when he only had a stuffed one to play with.
Backdoor Calvin and Hobbes movie.
Have you seen...
You guys?
Have you seen the... images of somebody has taken Calvin and Hobbes, the yeah. characters, cut them out and put them in Photoshop them into real photographs.
He got a C&D too.
Did he really?
Aww. Yeah. From who?
The people that.
Oh, Andrews McMillan, I think yeah. is the.
That's awful.
There were comparisons drawn to like Garfield minus Garfield, and someone had done a post. Someone who's a lawyer with a blog had done a post trying to basically eliminate the difference between. Subtleties in the intentions between them, in which one is fair and one is not. But he actually asked them if it was cool, and they responded by saying, "No, please don't."
Oh, that was his mistake.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, don't ask for permission. Ask for yeah. forgiveness.
Or when you're asked for forgiveness, just run.
Well, if they
fly
it's,
away,
it's
fly.
A problem. If you do it and they have to tell you no, and if you do it anyway, then you're the asshole. But if you just do it and everyone loves it and they didn't already tell you no, then they're the asshole and they probably would leave it alone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was a mistake.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't have brought it up, but there we did. Hey, look, it's Portal 2 in there.
Yeah, it's super is. I love the fact, by the way, on the schematic.
That guy has a really nice ear.
On the schematic itself for Cerebro 2... It looked like this. They, like, deliberately built it run down, it looks like, because you look at the computer schematic and they're like, yeah, there's a bunch of panels missing and there's all this stuff. It's like, oh, that was the plan then, I guess.
This is brand new, man. This is right off the line.
Nah.
We build them shitty now. That's how we do them.
Although, apparently, the panel, like, again, I'm sure Eddie could be like, oh, yeah, so here's how that works. But apparently, as we discover later, the specific arrangement of panels changes the way it's calibrated.
It changes the powers of it or something?
Yeah. I would think that would be just a setting in the, you know, switch from human to mutant. But I guess you have to actually swap the panels around.
Can X make cats think funny things too?
I don't know if you'd want to get up in that brain.
You're saying, can Professor X control the minds of non-humans and non-mutants? Is that what you're saying? Lesser animals?
Cats, sharks.
I don't see why not.
Flies.
The
worker ants.
The brain is, you know, our brains are just built on top of the brains of the creatures that came before us. So,
yeah, but that may be within the story that's the part. Now we're going to get a bunch of people being like, they don't know what they're talking about without Eddie. Eddie should have tuned
in. We don't.
We yeah.
We're just guys.
Full disclaimer.
Yeah, I would
not that.
You
we're
could,
not nerds in that
okay,
particular.
Day. I would put it this way. I don't know what the official. Thing is, but you could go either way. You could do your thing where it's like, if you're a comic book writer, if you wanted him to control a cat or whatever for the sake of a story, totally fine.
Yeah.
If it was important for conflict that he could not control a cat or something like that, then you could also justify that by saying, like you said, you know, our brains are built on top of the brains of lesser animals, but it's that top layer that he's actually doing anything with.
Yeah.
So if you're lacking consciousness, then there's nothing for him to manipulate.
And there could be a really cool reveal where he's at SeaWorld and finds himself suddenly able to do that with dolphins, though.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's really, like, think out this premise, then.
Yes.
If he could...
let us shall.
If the rules of his magic being are he can only control the minds of sapient creatures, i.e. humans and mutants, and then he becomes... then it's proven that he's capable of controlling the minds of, say, dolphins and whales and maybe elephants and lower primates, other primates. Does that qualify as a test for sentience then? Do we then have to give personhood rights to dolphins and elephants if Professor X can mind control them?
Only the blue ones.
Well, I think...
That's how rights go. You start by color. Yeah.
And to be fair, I'm sure he'd get to the point of being like, well, let's see if they can just accept the mutant sentience thing first. Then we'll start fighting for the dolphins. Like, let's
first they came for the dolphins, and I said nothing.
And I said...
The Cyclops thing doesn't really look that great to me. But that's not necessarily an implementation thing. I think it's just I don't like the idea of it. I don't think it's something that really... It's just this blobby non-effect that doesn't do anything for me.
I think it's a great...
They did a good job of making it look like it's forceful.
Yeah.
It just doesn't look much to me.
I think that's the problem is that we're looking at a particularly dialed-up version because he's trying to fucking kill her. Whereas normally it's dialed down, and I think there's a little bit nuance to the design of the effect.
Fire hose.
Yeah.
Is that guy going to flood the tunnels now?
I think...
that guy hit me. Fuck him. I'm flooding the tunnel.
The laser beams are one of the inherently sillier looking effects.
He's going to wake up and be like, oh, fuck
it.
First thing he does when he wakes up, I'm flooding it.
They're one of the inherently sillier looking effects, so I think they do... Coming at it from the other side, they do a really... as good of a job as they can making it seem like a real thing.
I guess so.
Yeah.
It's fair enough.
The visor itself, though, does look pretty stupid.
Why does he have a visor?
It helps him control it. He can open his eyes and walk around and not have to worry about frying everything he looks at.
Yeah,
the reason he reaches up and touches the side is he can click it and lift up the visor and allow him to use it as a weapon.
Oh,
because otherwise he's just got the sunglasses, which is fine, but he can see and not kill everyone, but. If he lifts up his sunglasses, he's got no way to focus it, which is what happened in the first power. One.
Who would win in a fight? Cyclops or Geordi LaForge? Geordi can read. Does that help?
Geordi's also got that killer little roll under the closing door move. That'll come in handy. All the time.
Reading is more handy. Just to sit down in front supports Geordi's reading ability.
It took me a little while to understand you were making a Reading Rainbow reference, and I was like, why have we decided Cyclops is illiterate? That's, that's really mean.
Have you ever seen him read?
That's true. He lives at a school.
He lives at a
he
house.
He teaches
Michael.
At a school.
He teaches at a school. That's true.
Oh, so now we're appealing to authority, are we?
Well, if it's a private school, they can hire whoever they want.
It is a homeschool.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. I have no reason to explicitly doubt the fact that Cyclops can't read.
Oh, man. I wish Eddie were still here because he could say more about the character that's about to appear other than her name.
Or whether or not she can read.
Or whether she can read. But he could... but I don't know that...
We lost our mutant power.
Yeah. I really don't know that much about Lady Deathstrike or what her, you know, kind of relationship is. I will say that...
I wonder if that's what Hader was referring to when he said the third act started falling apart.
I think so. I think she, you know, her getting stuck in... Because she doesn't really... She doesn't do much... I was watching this, like I said, to prepare for this, and I was struck by the fact that the scene here with them fighting doesn't accomplish anything in terms of the story, really. It's like he's got no goal that she is preventing him from accomplishing. He's just kind of wandering around. And neither does she. She's just fighting him. So it goes on for a while, and it's... While it's a neat idea because they both have the same powers, which I believe is not the correct
depiction of Lady Deathstrike.
That is not the correct depiction of, and they don't actually call her Lady Deathstrike.
He had no junk.
Yeah, I'm sure they had to paint that out or something. That was someone's job for a
good work
days.
If you can get it.
Yeah.
That guy was probably married, and he would go home every night, and his wife would just be like, please tell me about it.
Yeah.
I was just doing effects on a shot that had a penis in it that needed to be removed.
Yeah. I did a shot with I put that on your reel.
I dare you. Pain reel. I dare you. Seth Brower did, he worked on Black Swan. And you know that shot where she pulls the hangnail all the way up her finger?
He did that one?
Yeah.
Oh.
And it's on his reel. And every single time he shows me a new version, I'm like, fuck you, Seth.
Oh,
Jesus.
God. If I were looking at that reel, I would not hire him because I would just turn that reel off right there.
Yeah.
It does get your attention, I'll tell you that. He's just like, God damn it, Seth. It's a great shot. It's a really, really compelling and beautiful effect. It's just horrifying.
Yeah. Like I said before, I think Singer has gotten
better at action.
But yeah, between X-Men and X2 here,
she's got four more things. That means she's better. Woo!
He got much better at action, but it just became it's a cool scene, but it's not.
Do you like the choreography?
It's pretty good, but it. I don't know. It's not extremely clever in terms of choreography. You know, there's not any really long takes where they're just going at it. It's like,
whoa,
bam, stab, bam, throw across the room. That was a cool shot, though.
Yeah, it's very quick.
Yeah,
I mean, it's an action scene, so that's.
But it's cool, and I like her little lady claws.
Yeah. That's a clever way to do it, and I agree with what Eddie was saying before about this reveal, where he's like, "Oh, that's a thing besides me." Then that's not good.
What's the reveal?
She has the healing factor because I particularly like the way he plays it in terms of, "Oh, I know what." You know, because he, even earlier in this film, you know, there's the scene where the guy was trying to stab him and he heals and totally fucks up the other guy.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, this is what that feels like.
Oh,
that sucks.
That's what that oh shit moment is for other people. But it does. I mean, the whole point of Wolverine is that he's supposed to be, you know, unique. He's supposed to be one of a kind, and he's supposed to be the only one that could even take the claws and the skeleton because he had the healing power. So,
right.
to have literally the female version of him, both the claws and the instantaneous healing in the second movie, feels cheap to me.
Well, and she only exists for that scene.
Yeah,
it's like there's an opportunity there because there's so much. He's got this aspect of, you know, the undercurrent that he doesn't really get to do much with in this movie. But there's the undercurrent. The whole reason he's there is I want to find out who I am. I want to find out what this means.
Not only that, but you could also play with sort of the subtext of this movie in the last one where they're talking about what does it mean to be a mutant and does it mean that you're not human and are you alone? Are you unique? Do you exist outside of the existing system? And then you have this carbon copy of him.
Yeah.
You might be able to do something interesting with that in terms of resonance.
Yeah, well, just exploring your identity as a mutant and as a person
exactly.
And stuff like that. And he's trying to figure out his place in the world. And he's going, well, there's this other person that's like me. What does that mean? You know, what does that entail?
I should probably jam her full of liquid goo.
Yeah.
That's what we all say, though. Oh, that's...
Yeah, it would have been nice...
That's horrifying.
If there had been something... Some attempt at conversation between the two of them. Just like, okay, we're the same. You're mind controlled right now. Just, I need you to hang on for a couple seconds until the mind control wears off, and then we can have a real conversation, and then maybe I can get through to you.
Yeah, like maybe if you were trying not to fuck her up. Because
yeah.
Like, I'm waiting
He's
for
trying
this...
to delay her
yeah.
until the mind control
I'm
wears
waiting
off.
For that to
That's
wear off so we can talk. And then there's a goal there as opposed to they're just fighting.
Yeah.
Because
That's
you
great.
Can still have a really cool fight scene
and
there,
then he gets
but then
pissed
it means
by
something.
Someone else kills her or she dies some other way. Some third individual has agency on the fact that she doesn't live long enough
Phoenix
to ever
Phoenix
talk
would
to
kill her.
And then he gets pissed.
Jean Grey.
And then he has a motivation for whatever happens for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good job.
Hooray, we fixed it.
Yeah. I do also...
We fixed a good movie.
I also like what's coming up now, which feels right here, which is like, oh, good, the villain has come to save the day. and that's completely what this is. It's the villain of the story, or what everyone kind of understands to be the villain. It's like,
it's like
no,
Terminator 2.
This is no good. Yeah, he is like Terminator 2, but then he remembers he's the villain and tries to kill everyone on the other side.
This is an excellent example of how to expand the world of a movie in a sequel without fucking it up, essentially. Like, everybody is still the character that they are, and you still have conflict, and you're still introducing a new villain, so you're not rehashing what's come before.
Right. You add complexity and do not take away what's already there.
Yeah, there you go. You add complexity without compromising the integrity of the story you've already told.
Yeah, and build off of it. I mean, yeah. I think that's what... That's... I mean, we did our whole episode on it and stuff like that, and we're all kind of on the same page. But that's definitely what a lot of people were responding to with Spider-Man 2 as well, as a sequel, and why so
you
many
say
people...
So.
No, that's why the people...
Sure,
because
whatever.
Because it actively built off the first one, as opposed to just, oh, it's Spider-Man and Mary Jane again. It was like all of those things that happened. Like, we're still acknowledging that those things happened, and we're playing off the consequences of those. I don't think, you know, in retrospect, I agree that it didn't do a good job, but
its intention was a saga, not episodic.
Yes, whereas a lot of movies are just kind of like, okay, that happened, and now we're going to move on, and we're never going to address that again, you know. And that's why a lot of sequels feel like a rehash too, because like you said, you know, they'll do the one movie, and then the next movie, it's like the exact same thing happens again.
Right.
And the villain is doing their thing and all of that, and there's no sense of growth.
Yeah.
So. Whereas here, it's
that's
exactly
what
the same thing.
That's what I'm cautiously optimistic about Iron Man 3, because at least based off the trailer and his narration, where he's like, yeah, so I'm this dude, you know, I'm do this and that, and yeah, occasionally I save the world. It seems like it's what I'm excited, optimistic about, the whole Marvel, you know, continuing this whole, like, second wave of them. Like, telling these stories, but acknowledging in a way that kind of hasn't been done before, at least on the scale of, yes, this has come before, but we're still on some kind of emotional journey.
Right. Well, even the line he said about, even in the trailer, just the one line that he says of, nothing's been the same since New York. He's talking about the events of the Avengers.
Yeah.
And he's talking about the fact that the Avengers changed his trajectory as a person and as a character.
Right.
You know, and that makes it significant. And it's an ongoing story as opposed to this week in Iron Man, you know.
Do you ever think about what the population of a fictional world would call the events of what happened in the movie about that fictional world? Like, one day, a little over 10 years ago, some planes flew into buildings in New York, and we call that 9/11.
Right.
What do they call what happened in Avengers in the fictional New York now? Do they call it the attack? Do they call it the thing with the weird mechanical space ghosts? Do we call it
Avengers Day? I don't mean...
That's, yeah, maybe...
A-Day?
Maybe. It all depends. A-Day? That's something that kind of ends up growing, and if they did that in the movies, if they did that in the Marvel movies,
they start talking about A-Day.
If they start talking
about
A-Day, then you totally, you know, you get that. Well, there's also the tough part of, like, how would New York
have changed?
New York in movies, it's like fucking every day is some random. Like,
yeah, I want to see a movie set in that universe of New York where it's not just it. Like, yeah, have 9/11 there, and then have everything else too, where it's like you have 9/11, you also have, you know, the
Chitauri
invasion.
We can't call
the Cloverfield attack.
Yeah. Property values would drop.
We can't call this one A-Day because that's what happened with Independence Day in 96.
Yeah.
So this one's not A-Day. And there are, I mean, this was Aliens, but we already had Aliens.
But it wasn't
in
the Godzilla alien. This was more like, yeah.
They just name them like hurricanes. This was terrible event Irene.
Yeah. And then if, like, one of, you know, somebody from our universe, say, you know, hypothetically, went into their universe, you'd be like, well, what about 9/11? What, you mean that Tuesday?
Yeah.
This wasn't a big deal.
Oh, we didn't even name that one.
Yeah.
Some buildings fell down.
Yeah.
Come on. We knocked over half the city twice last week.
Yeah. And rebuilt it, by the way. We're getting good at that.
9/11 sounds like an awesome day to us.
Did you see, I posted a long time ago, but some insurance company actually like did damage assessment of what the Avengers events.
And it was like $14 billion in property damage.
Well, it was essentially basically their conclusion was it was about as expensive as the Japanese tsunami.
In the chat, Vapes says that it's actually called the Battle of New York and the Avengers.
All right.
But that's lame. Plus, there's lots of battles. Soon we're going to have to start naming them like hurricanes, I'm telling you.
Although I like the associated
with the color of whatever.
I like it happening in that universe where I don't have to live through it. But if they're calling it the Battle of New York, that means there are battles elsewhere that such that they have to specify. And that,
I don't know,
that makes a potential.
If I've known anything about how wars can work throughout history, you can pretty much name them whenever the fuck you want.
That's true.
7 years war lasted 9 years. Okay, whatever. We don't care anymore. We're just making shit up. They're almost like the titles of comic book movies. He has kind of a Ted Levine thing, depending on what his face is doing.
Which one?
Hugh Jackman? Oh.
Oh, boy.
Brian Cox is another one, but, I mean, should give him the credit. Another actor where it's like, I'm glad you're here. Class in the joined up.
Yeah.
You know? You make this work because you're willing to do it.
And really, I mean, when you're talking about the other two guys in the pantheon that you have to deal with are Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen.
You better bring
you gotta bring somebody who brings the money.
It's never safe to just maybe assume that they're both gonna suck this time.
Yeah, you shouldn't bet money on that.
I think Ian McKellen was a fad.
70 more years, and then everyone's
going. That was a fun week, you guys, when we put him in all the movies, but come on.
I still think we should make a Dracula with him. I don't care. I don't care how old he is. Just do it.
But not Chris Lee?
No, well, I care how old he is. He's not. Yeah, and he's been Dracula.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
He had his shot.
And he blew it.
Plus, he doesn't leave his house anymore. He's just got like,
dude, if you were Christopher Lee, would you?
No. I totally get it. I'm just saying.
I just walk around reading things out loud.
But I mean,
nutrition facts.
He's still in the sodium.
In the full on white Saruman robes.
But he still appears in movies, but I'm pretty sure he's just got like a blue wall in his house and people come and visit him and shoot him in costumes and then put him in movies because you don't see him interacting with people anymore. He's always his own shots.
I guess that's true.
Like, what is he
doing
lately?
Now it's broadening up into a massive conspiracy in my head. Yeah. Maybe he never existed at all.
I guess he did in Hobbit.
He's like Tupac at Lollapalooza.
What was that Pacino movie? Simone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Sim-1.
Sim-1.
Wow, I forgot about that movie. Coffee and bagels.
I also think we haven't seen a lot of... I mean, we haven't addressed a lot of it, but I feel like there's a bit... There's more humor in this movie than in the previous one. Like the gag about her shutting him up because he was going to do his whole spiel about in the Munich circus, they called... No.
That's the third act. We're done. We don't need that anymore.
We got it, but you're cool.
Hmm.
What?
So if he holds Halle Berry, they both bamf.
Yes.
Yes.
If he's holding her left hand and she's holding someone else's in the other hand,
it's bamfs all the way down.
I know. Could we have like a giant group hug of the entire planet and all bamf each other just rotating around the world? Just boom.
Everybody just moves one step to the left.
Yes. Or does it not work quite as well once you get a few steps down the line? So that guy just half bamps and it's horrifying.
Oh,
it's like that. It's like that.
Well, presumably he's got to like hold the spatial information in his head. So I'm assuming there's some sort of upper limit on what he can visualize.
Well, that's his navigation, though. We're not talking about the navigation, just the ability. If everyone's all touching, they can all bamp with him, but he has only got the capacity for knowing where he is but not someone 300 feet away is. What happens to those guys? Because they're going to bamp somewhere. If that's how it works. It might not be how it works.
Get your Bluetooth out of here, Halle Berry.
You are not an X-Man.
At least if you're going to do something like that, be like Cyclops and put on Google Glass. Come on.
Yeah. Oh, man, Google Glass. I really hope. I hope that is a fad. I'm like the old guy in the room. Like, I'm not. And I'm the one who wears glasses. I'm like, I'm not putting that shit on my face. I don't want that.
You are so going to do it.
Well, I will when it becomes
March 9th, 2013, 6:16 p.m.
No, it's gonna because it's going to become the thing where I can
literally.
We shall
refer back to this.
I can. It's going to become a thing where I can literally like no longer navigate a car without having Google Glass because it's all going to be built in. It's like okay, fine. Now I have to use Google Glass or I'm going to die. Or
let me ask you a question. How long was it into their existence before you got a smartphone? Well, you're an Apple fanboy, so you probably got an iPhone.
I got the iPhone.
Day they came
yeah,
out.
I got the iPhone, but smartphones predate it. I'm not as much of an Apple fanboy to think they don't. there were smartphones before the iPhone.
I'm aware of that. Yes.
So there.
What are we doing?
I don't know.
We're taking pot shots at each other for some reason.
We're vamping. We're vamping.
Vamp. B V A M P F V. Vamp. It's drunk vamping. Vamping. Vamp.
There's a. This is
so
an.
This seems like a really just fucked up version of the Nexus that Picard is in.
Mm.
And then, that's a Star Trek reference that neither of you probably got.
Nope.
Was that? That was Generations, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Ooh.
I knew that.
Gold Star.
Yeah. That's right. I want a cookie.
No, seriously, guys.
Hey, flood of the tunnel. Yeah, seriously, I'm going to get a cookie after this.
And watch him be like, oh, this is, it's just kind of a leaky flood.
Yeah, the guy's still in there. Like
he was expecting Temple of Doom.
He's like, oh, that was disappointing.
Yeah, he's like, I have to find another button now. What's one? None of these is exciting. There's nowhere near as much possibility in off.
All these other ones just make calls.
there's probably something worth saying about the part where this guy, Jason, the mind control guy, when I almost said Picard. Oh my god. when Professor X you know, basically broke his hold and was starting to come out of it, his reaction was he's going to be talking about his dad, talking about Stryker, who's going to be so mad at me. And I was like, there's got to be something to be said about this mind control guy has had his mind so twisted by his father.
Right. That's great.
That even given all of even given everything that's been done to him, he's still doing everything to try and please his father, you know?
Oh, there it is.
There it is.
I hope the guy stuck around long enough to see
this. Yeah, I hope he lived to see this day.
Putting a lot of emphasis on
I just imagine him like Sam Neill wanting to see Montana in Karate October. That's all he wanted, man. He just wanted to see what happens when you flood the tunnel.
Some men just want to watch the world drown.
Some men just want to watch the tunnel flood. I'm just saying.
That little blonde kid at the front, I feel like he's somebody. I feel like he's
kid.
Yeah.
He got cut out of his crew in 1995.
Okay, so Professor X is totally helping himself stand up there. I'd totally call bullshit on him. Like, Professor X.
The wheelchair thing is
actually paralyzed.
It's just, it's like a Rascal scooter. He doesn't really need it. He just does it because it's easier.
Yeah. And that's how I get it. I just put a basket in my lap, and I don't have to, you know, I'm out of everyone's way.
He goes to Target, and he's riding around in his wheelchair. Yeah. Just like between the aisles.
The other question is, if he's one of the most powerful telekinetics in the world, why can't he just telekinesis his legs?
Well, he's a telepath. He's not telekinetic.
Oh, he's also telekinetic.
Oh, is he? Yeah. Well, then fuck him then.
Blame the victim.
You're exactly right. Why can't he just... Well, that would be... I feel like I don't know. If I were one of the most powerful telekinetics in the world, I'd be like, really? I'm going to spend half my effort all the time to walk?
Aerobics. Like,
seriously? Well, it's not aerobics because you're not actually using your muscles. You're just puppeteering yourself around.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's anaerobics for your skill.
No, I guess so.
I always wonder why Yoda didn't do that. Why doesn't Yoda just, well, first of all, be 6 feet tall? Second of all, just, you know.
If you're so powerful, Yoda, why don't you grow a little taller?
Why don't you just float around all the time? You don't have to have, his IM name must be like, I can't reach it, 45. Because he would be useless in a kitchen.
He does that in the prequels, doesn't he?
He's sitting on a little sled.
He sits on a little
hollow chair.
So which he is makes totally, the chair do the work.
Which, to be fair, as according to canon now, in Attack of the Clones, he's a complete bullshitter. Like, he could walk around just fine if he wanted to. You know, he does that whole fight scene.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he does walk with a limp, doesn't he?
He's got his little cane and stuff.
During the prequel trilogy, I always thought the idea was that in the prequel trilogy he could do that, but then
because he was only 900 as opposed to
he was only 870 as opposed to 900.
No, I always assumed that the gag was
less than that, 882.
I always figured the thing was as revealed in Empire. It's like he just does that so people will kind of underestimate him,
right?
Or he does that to make people feel comfortable
around him. Well, he does that with Luke in the first place.
Exactly.
He feigns not only weakness but also callowness.
He feigns senility is what he feigns, but I guess there's probably the aspect of you discover who a person really is. Don't look at the way they treat you. Look at how they treat like the waiter. Yeah. It's like if this fucking little this frog with dementia. Like if you're nice to him, then that tells him a lot about you.
That's why I didn't want to train Luke.
Yeah,
because Luke was like, fuck off, little thing.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. Because he's like, this guy's a dickhead. Like, yeah. Why am I going to train him?
And of course, he's trying to be all nice about it to Obi-Wan. Like, oh, he's too old. He's too this. All he wants to say to Obi-Wan is, the dude was a fucking dick.
Yeah.
The whole point of that test is to see if they're a dick, and he failed.
He passed. Miserably. He passed. Every test until the dick test.
But it was the first test.
He failed the dick test.
Unfortunately for him, it was the first test.
Yeah.
If we could compartmentalize people, he goes to the dick room. Oh, X-Men's on.
Yeah. We're back. It's almost over, though, so we're fine.
Yay. So there's a very exciting climax in there somewhere.
Well, that was the problem. I specifically remember David Hayter talking about this and how there was something else written, and I guess like they ran out of time or they ran out of money or they weren't sure that they were going to do the full Phoenix Saga thing, so they kind of had another ending, and it became very action-y and lost track of the characters quite a bit.
Yeah.
And sort of what's going on with them, and I think you definitely do feel that, especially now if we're not listening to the sound and we're just trying to watch it and kind of comment on it. As we had revealed to us in Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, this situation kind of goes, this is going on for a while and there's actually not a lot happening.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, it becomes a lot of action without a framework around it.
Yeah.
Without the framework of a story. So it's like, okay, so there's water and claws and bamfing and things and weather and it's
bamfing.
I think you could definitely have, I mean, because this is probably, this sequence has probably gone on for at least half an hour, and I'd guess probably more like 40 minutes. You could probably have cut that in half and not lost too much.
Yeah.
And really tighten it up and hopefully spent a little bit more time with the characters, have more going on with, like we said, Lady Deathstrike, or be able to see, or if not in this part, take those 20 minutes and put them elsewhere in the movie to help develop these characters so that at this point matters more.
To give Jean Grey a save the cat moment or to set up the Phoenix better or whatever you're going to do.
I missed the setup for this moment. What is the significance of what she's doing right now?
They're not going to get away from the Breaking Dam in time.
Mm-hmm.
So she is sacrificing herself to hold back the water to give the plane enough time to get away.
And that's very valiant of her.
Yes.
Because she's the only one
saved.
Well, okay. Because she's the only one that can do it, except for the woman that can control the elements and the guy who can turn anything into ice. And I'm presuming that includes water that's already pretty cold. The guy with the giant laser eyes.
Shall not pass.
And the guy with the firepower.
No, he's gone.
Oh, he left. Okay.
He left with Magneto. So there's that.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
So there's only seven.
Yeah. That's pretty good. And really, I bet Nightcrawler could do something with that plane.
I'm sure he could do something.
He could manage something.
He could just bamp the whole plane.
He's on the plane. If clothes come with him, that means that anything will go with him.
If he touches the fuselage with his hands and then bamps.
And he's standing on it. Oh, but he's connecting with his shoes. He has to take his shoes off, but then he can bamp the plane.
He
should wear flip-flops all the time.
And then there's this other telekinetic going, oh, I'll tell you what she's thinking. I'm not going to, help.
Yeah.
But I'll let you know what she's got going on in her head.
To what degree are you an asshole if you have telekinesis and you just never bring it up? Like, you ask people, to bring you things and stuff because you pretend like you actually can't move at all. That's more fucked up. That's worse than faking, paraplegia. That's faking paraplegia when you're actually more powerful than everyone.
Yeah.
But you're not doing it to test someone. I mean, Yoda's okay because he was trying to do the dick test.
Yeah. And
which, by the way, that is now the canon way of expressing what he was doing.
The other thing about Jean Grey is she wasn't developed to the point where I understand why these two guys have this scene. This exact scene where both of them just, you know, pull out all the stops and do a great job in their performances, I think.
Are they going to kiss?
Both of them. But I totally thought, watching it again, I was like, does he kiss Professor X while Professor X is, like, channeling her? That would be...
That is a little bit of an awkward moment.
Yeah. I also didn't...
Dude, look at him. Really kicking ass.
And that's what I'm saying.
Broadway, motherfucker.
Yeah, well, this is. I mean, now we've seen him in Les Miserables and stuff like that, and we're like, yeah, that's what Hugh Jackman does. But seeing...
It's like when you see Ben Affleck cry for the first time.
Well, but seeing not only Hugh Jackman do that, but seeing the character of Wolverine taken to that place,
right,
you know, is a very unexpected thing. But as I was saying, I didn't get the sense of Jean Grey as a character being pushed to the point where it's like... I'm also afraid of her. I see how dangerous she is, and I understand her decision. She's like, I can use this to help everyone, and this is the only way that I can use this to help everyone. If I stay around two more days, I'm going to destroy it.
Kill everybody, so this is the better option.
Yeah, this is the better option, and I didn't get the sense that she'd been pushed to that because we didn't spend enough time with her doing anything.
Yeah, well, we only have, what, two moments in the film where where the moment is about, oh, her powers are kind of getting crazy.
Yeah.
Though with the very first scene, and there's one other, right? But I can't even name it, but having just watched it, I can't.
Did they really need a 1K on the president?
Oh, it's when they're doing the, it's the missiles. Like,
the missiles,
like
right. The, okay, yeah, you're right.
The Phoenix power.
Are there
power
any other moments
out
in the film that builds that idea?
No, not really.
Yeah.
And I feel like it should have. There should have been two scenes with Jean Grey. There should have been the one scene where you see why everyone loves her, and you see why, oh, she's so valuable to the team. And there's the other scene where she, you know, she uses her powers. I guess the missile scene is trying to get there, but it doesn't quite take it far enough. She uses her powers, but everyone kind of goes, whoa. Yeah. Like, that was a little scary. And I totally appreciate the way you helped us just then, but maybe don't do that anymore.
You know what it is? You know what's missing is the sense of collateral damage.
Uh-huh.
Because there are moments where, okay, the power is becoming greater, and I'm not sure if I can control it, and yada, yada, yada. But in neither of those moments, there's not enough of them as it is, but in neither of them is there a sense of, if it's growing beyond my control, and therefore I'm going to hurt people and things around me,
right,
beyond my control.
Like I said, I feel like they were trying to do that with the missile scene and having her essentially take down the plane accidentally, but...
It doesn't really work. It plays as more like, well, she just didn't do quite good enough of a job. As opposed to her power being the one directly causing harm to them.
It was more that the first missile... She used her power, but she felt scared by her power, and so she was afraid to use it on the other missile until it was almost too late, and that's what screwed it up. As opposed to, she used her power, and she did exactly what she wanted to do, but she wasn't thinking enough about the collateral damage, and it had much bigger consequences that were frightening.
Yeah.
That scene
that,
does not
That's exist. The element that's been that was missing from, yeah. from this.
I also want to say, I'm not sure I buy that guy as the president. He feels like a Secret Service guy. I look at him and I go, as we learned our lesson from the whole thing with Nixon on TV, I'm like, no one would vote for him. Look at him. No one's going to vote for that guy.
I don't know. I'm just...
He must have some really good policies. That's all I got to say.
At this point, and I know this is 2003, I know this is pre-Obama, but at this point, I'm just like, when... It's this weird reverse effect where anytime...
You think it's racist when you don't see a black president?
No, I like completely don't buy it when you have the stereotypical square-jawed Romney-looking guy now. Like, what was I just watching where it was like... I forget, but it was, you know, something recent, something very new, and it was just total square-jawed Romney-looking guy, and I'm like, that's so unrealistic.
Yeah.
That's so A, cliche and stereotypical that I completely don't buy it.
Yeah, that's not what presidents look like.
Put Matt Santos in there. Put Gina Davis in there.
No.
Put
Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman. Anybody but, you know, a Mitt Romney look-alike now.
Yeah, I don't know. It just it's like people. See, I'm saying this about an actor though, so it's okay. People say this in real life about presidential candidates. He doesn't look presidential to me.
I think he looks too stereotypically presidential.
I don't know. He looks like the bad guy. He looks like, which I guess is a statement on the president.
He looks like a rich white man as president. That's a bad guy if I've ever heard one.
Yeah.
Why did no one in that room just panic when they saw a file suddenly appear on his desk?
Because their brains rationalized it away.
They're like, oh, that was always there.
Yeah.
That must have been there before the power outage.
That's what we did. That's what we do.
Although I imagine
your brain does.
I imagine in a world full of mutants, it's okay to rationalize with that wasn't there before. Someone did that.
Well, yeah, I mean it
happens when they change something.
It's a psychological term. It's called quasi-magical thinking when you think in those terms, which is illogical in our real world.
Yeah.
But if you live in a world with magicians or mutants, I'm saying it's totally valid.
Yeah, in that world it's not cheating.
Yeah. A mutant did it.
Yeah.
A wizard did it. Well, if you're in Harry Potter world, then a wizard probably did do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's probably quite feasible.
There's no that is, such according thing to Occam's, as magic.
According to Occam's razor, this is probably the likeliest yeah,
that's exactly.
explanation.
In a world with wizards, that is the explanation that makes more sense.
Yeah.
I just like the idea that you have to calibrate for that sometimes, though. When something really unlikely happens in your life, you have to go, there's not wizards still, right?
Yeah.
Okay, then it wasn't a wizard. Damn it.
That's the Methods of Rationality fanfic. Check it out. That's what that
this must be
was.
A reshoot or early in the thing or something, because Logan's hair is way longer.
No, this is on the IMDb movie. Trivia. I was just
he's
reading
talking about. He's been talking to the ice guy. He wants to
No, what?
Now.
What?
No, his... because they this was a reshoot or it was whatever. It was the end of the shoot or something. He was already filming something else, and so he had long hair for it, so they had to put the Wolverine wig over top really long hair, and that's why it's higher than normal.
Called
Fortunately,
it.
They don't run into that problem when they're using Patrick Stewart.
Yeah.
Oh, his head changed.
Well, they did shave his head. As Picard, he has the little ring of white hair.
Not to harp on how great it is to have him in this movie, but I still love the fact where everyone, like, the least imaginative answer, people like, we're making an X-Men movie. Well, Professor X is obviously Patrick Stewart. Like, the whole internet says that. And Patrick Stewart's like, well, obviously.
Did he say that?
I assume so. He's like, of course I would be Professor X. Like,
who
would even argue? I guess Ben Kingsley could have done it, too.
He could have done it, yeah.
But Stewart, but, I mean, at this point, you couldn't undo it.
No.
Well, I mean, there literally is a X-Men Star Trek crossover comic book where they make that joke. They have Professor X and Captain McCarthy go, hey, we look like the same person.
Was that pre this happening?
I think it's post.
Okay.
They're like, hey, bald white five.
Hey!
And then presidential, am I right?
We have that in the theater. This is like, oh my god, did you see it?
Yeah,
and
yes,
yeah,
see what?
Totally see it.
What was that?
Are you serious?
Well, I saw a thing.
Okay, you saw it. That yeah, there's just the phoenix under the water.
Yeah, that appears in the last moment, but in the theater.
Okay,
in
Zach
the days
Penn,
before,
he was right. The
Zach Penn and David Hayter, ampersand.
So we were all right.
Brian Singer. Yes. Yeah. Actually, pretty much every name we said was up there except for David S. Goyer. I guess he did Marvel. So Blade is Marvel. So he did Marvel and DC.
Anyway, X-Men 2 is a very good movie, and I enjoy it thoroughly, even though I've seen it like 3 times and don't intend to ever really watch it again. I can't wait till they do First Class, though, because I thought First Class was a lot of fun. Brian?
First Class is fine. It's just not amazing. Yeah, I enjoy it. I actually, on revisiting, I didn't rewatch it for this viewing, and so it's been a while since I've seen it. But I've seen it several times. But going through it, I will say it takes a couple points away based on what we were talking about and how it kind of loses direction in the towards the end.
It's not perfect, but it's still
It's not perfect, but it's still a solid film.
Yeah. Mike? I think just to touch on the First Class thing, you got to give it the handicap of coming after The Last Stand and Wolverine.
Fair enough. Well, I'll give you that.
I didn't see those, but...
Yeah. So, you see those, and then
talk to me.
Yeah, and then it's like, oh my god, First Class is the first time there has ever been
Holy
a good
shit.
Movie.
I just had an idea.
What?
What happens if you put Brian Cox in a movie with other Brian Cox? How do they credit that? Like when they're doing these, when they're doing the single cards, do they just do Brian Cox?
I'm imagining
Brian
the
Cox
physicist is not in SAG.
Well, I'm just saying, if it could happen,
if Brian Cox the physicist joined SAG,
they have different names.
He would have to take a different
name.
Yeah, but he could
as himself.
Yeah, they would probably do a thing where Brian Cox the actor would just get a card, and they'd save the other one for the end, and it would be featuring Brian Cox as himself or something like that.
Yeah.
If he were a major enough role, otherwise he'd
if
just
he
be in school.
If he did like a Neil deGrasse Tyson thing.
Yeah.
Did you like the movie?
Yeah, I liked the movie. I enjoyed getting a chance to revisit it and kind of check it out. It's 10 years later, so there are plenty of other movies that have had the chance to grow on top of this and have kind of learned the lesson of getting even deeper into the characters and exploring psyches and stuff in a way that this movie doesn't. But at the time, this movie was certainly doing it a lot more than anything around it, and made it very impressive. And the visual effects, I think, all hold up pretty much. There was nothing in here.
Yeah, I agree with that.
As opposed to the first X-Men movie, where it's kind of like, eh, and actually, even at the time, there was a good amount of stuff in the first X-Men movie that was sort of, but everything holds up here. Certainly, I think if made today, they would have done a lot more with the effects, but I like
what's
here.
Well, they could
here.
Do more cheaper, certainly.
Yeah. But I like what's here. I like the fact that they didn't get in your face with it just because they could or because they couldn't afford to at the time. And I kind of wish that more movies would go back to just using it to tell a story as opposed to getting
That's actually a good point. This is one of the last movies where visual effects were advanced enough that they looked this good, but still expensive and difficult enough where they're not there for the sake of being there.
Right.
Where there's still some constraint demonstrated just because economics demands it.
Yeah.
But therefore, you're not getting these effects unless you need them to tell the story.
Yeah. It was a couple... Basically, the turning point from that came a couple years later with War of the Worlds. And when they turned that around in 3-4 months... then that just doomed everything.
Which simultaneously high-five you guys and don't.
Yeah.
God damn it. I just noticed something in the credit roll. The figure...
Oh, wait. We didn't hear Eddie's thing. Comics and stuff or something.
Jesus.
That was mean. No. I wish Eddie were here because he'd be able to wrap it up.
I just noticed something in the credit roll. There's a figure on set called an armorer who provides the weaponry. And it's spelled in a way that I would not have anticipated. It was spelled
the British
A-R-M-O-U-R.
Way?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the British spelling.
Huh.
They like to put U's in things. Color, endeavor.
Yeah. Well, I think... Well,
humor.
we like to take it out of things because we were like, fuck those guys, 300 years ago or whatever.
King George can take his U.
Yeah.
you left this.
You take that, King George.
didn't you?
It is such an incredibly petty thing, but that's exactly why that happened when Webster made his dictionary.
Anyway.
It's like, fuck them and their extraneous use.
This has been Down in Front, kind of. You can always find more episodes at downinfront.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes and get a brand new episode every single week. Twitter.com/downinfront. Facebook, Down in Front. Show us at downinfrontshow@gmail.com. Go to the forum. Great conversation. Great people. Wonderful folks.
Hey, John Rudd. He did the mixing. He's a recordist. He did the mixing on the RVD2 soundtrack. Hey. I know him.
Woo.
Anyway,
I know Guy.
Hey, Trey gets to do that. I get to do it sometimes too.
I think Mike Fink, the VFX supervisor for this, is one of Trey's buddies. I think he's talked about him before.
Nice.
Any case, go to the forum, great people, blah blah blah, and then buy our shirts. Donate us money through the PayPal link. We're not asking, we're just saying. And until next time, my name is T. Christie.
Wait.
Holden Hill, designed to maintain the website. And until next time, my name is T. Christie.
Brian Finifter.
Mike Scott. Eddie Doty.
This is Fizzad. Did you just do a flying nut hand?
I did the hand, yeah. On his mic. I don't know. No, you can't see it in the stream. But I did that for you guys.
I guess now that we have cameras, that stuff makes...
You can't see it, though. It wasn't framed for that. But that was for you guys.
Oh, that was great.